I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smashbox TV's podcast 430. Terry Miller, the disc golf guy, joined alongside Johnny V.
Yeah, I am sitting here in my basement, my house.
Well, you're missing out because I believe out in the western part of the United States, I think a congratulations is in order. Kona and Colton, I believe, tied the knot a matter of just hours ago, actually.
Correct.
So congratulations to...
How did they not invite us?
The Montgomerys. Are you kidding? They make much better decisions in their lives than to have a couple of Yahoos like us involved out there.
We could have live streamed it. We could have commentated it. We could have done a lot of things.
Yeah, we could also ruined it. So
you're not wrong. We've been married for a long time. We're not ruining marriages.
A good decision on their part and a good decision for one another. We wish them nothing but eternal bliss and happiness and nothing but birdies and pars and eagles, whatever else good comes with that. So, again, congrats to the Montgomerys, I think, and we don't have them, although they should definitely be calling in. I think that'd be appropriate on their wedding night. But my first and only quick question before we get to our guest is, does she remain Kona Panis?
She might take a Valerie Doss Jenkins approach to it, where she's still Kona Panis on the
outwardly facing to the disc golf community,
to her public community, but privately legally changes her name to Montgomery. Kona Montgomery.
Okay. Well, I mean, those are the pressing questions. That's what our podcast is all about. You know, we are heavy and hard hitters here. And one guy that always wants us to bring the pain, 6-time world champ, Paul McBeth. Oh,
hey, what's up, guys?
Yeah. How are you doing? Where are you vacationing? Are you on a honeymoon of your own, or are you with Elon in a SpaceX? What are you doing?
Oh, yeah. You would think so. You know. Well, no, I'm just hanging out in the beautiful state of Virginia right now, as you can tell.
Yeah, I mean, that looks just like the Virginia I know.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And if it wasn't the Virginia, my second guess coastline would have been Florida. So, yeah.
It's probably the two combined. Yeah.
So, well, let's talk about that. First of all, welcome to the show. I know it's been a little bit. We've speculated on a few of your recent moves and what you've been doing over the last few weeks. You've been playing, and we'll talk about that. But what does this off season here, it has to feel like it's kind of now getting started in terms of you really scaling back on your playing to just a few events. What are you doing in Virginia? Didn't you just move from there?
Yeah, I did just move from here. So just here visiting Hannah's family, my family as well. My brother lives here. So we're doing Thanksgiving up here. We got up late last night. So just enjoying family time for the holidays. And then we'll head back down to Florida on Friday, make that drive back. And then, just enjoying the off season. Like it's an active off season, you know, as you've seen, I'm playing a couple tournaments in Florida. It's hard not to when the weather's so beautiful and, you know, they're fun places to go. So, just enjoying that, competing and playing tournaments that I feel like are really fun. So, yeah, it's been enjoyable. The move's gone well so far.
Well, so of course we don't need your address and we're not trying to dox you here, but where exactly did you move? just because I know you had a few different options in mind. Again, I don't need your street address or anything, but where did you move to?
Well, clearly to the beach, as you can tell in the background.
It's his backyard.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're Jacksonville Beach, Ponte Verde area. Or Ponte Vedra, sorry. Vedra. Yeah. I don't know what I'm saying. But yeah, we're right there in that area and just been enjoying it. Yeah, we obviously had the tropical storm, which was a cool experience, so
yeah, some probably not as much as others, but seemingly everything was all right for you guys and no major issues or concerns right off the bat. Yeah, in terms of
no,
the storm
just
rolling through.
Yeah, just flooded some of the streets and stuff, and it was mainly wind. There wasn't actually surprisingly a whole lot of rain. It just kind of blew through, but pretty windy, and that was a little scary in the sense of like you don't know what's going to fall from the trees. That was really the only concern that we had where we were at. But also we had the storm surge, which brought up some water up to our driveway. So not into our house, but the streets were flooded and it was an experience and it was nice to knock that out so quick and just know what it's like.
Yeah. And hopefully, you know, God willing, everything, you guys don't have any major catastrophes or anything else to deal with for quite some time. Although it seems like they're obviously just going to be inevitable and there's going to be more that roll through at some point or another. Maybe you kind of just answered this, but touch on Florida and why there, because we've seen you move around to a number of different places throughout the last few years, whether it's on season, off season, whatever the case might be, but why Florida and why that part of Florida maybe is the more hopefully insightful follow-up.
Yeah.
Why that part of Florida?
Yeah. So I hit the monitor here. lived in, I spent a couple winters in Florida, about 10 years ago. And I feel like that's where I gained my most in that time of my career, you know, for my pro career is where I felt like I played the most, interacted the most with the locals there and leagues and such. And just it seemed like a very active area. Like I grew up in Southern California, but there weren't many tournaments going on. Everything was spread out there in the winter, especially. There was nothing really going on to where Florida, it feels like their season is just kicking off pretty much. So it's somewhere to go. Like they have 4 A tiers and I could have gotten into all 4, but pulled my name off the wait list on one of them. So I'll be playing 3 A tiers. But it's just fun to go and compete and see some of these areas I've been and see how they've grown. And then also go to some new areas that I haven't explored yet. Like the South Florida Open, it's at a course where I haven't played yet, but I have played the South Florida Open before. So it kind of moves around in that area down there in like the Fort Lauderdale, Miami, so all over in that area. So it's just, I don't know, I feel like I learned so much, and I can not only like work on myself in the sense of like working out, just the athletic side and getting myself in shape, but I can also develop and work on skills by going out and being at the course, playing in some of these tournaments and just kind of creating a routine to where I'm extremely active out here. And I like that. So I think that helps a lot because I feel like I just like being athletic and making sure I'm carrying that into the season. And you know, if people are like, hey, let's go play this game or let's go play this sport outside of disc golf, I'm like, all right, I'm ready. Like I'm in shape and I'm good to go and let's go do it.
So two thoughts to that. One, some people may say and there's no one that's a better judge of your own and your body, your physique, your physical capabilities than yourself. But some would say, you know, with how rough the grind is, how tough it is out there week in and week out mentally and physically, like you need some recovery. Are you at all worried that now in this place and in this position, it's too tempting not to recover for all the reasons you just said? It's so easy to go out and be active
or more burnout quicker in the season.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to finish answering that last question too, you said why that area where we moved to. Yeah. Hannah has a lot of friends that live here. Yes. We've come down here and we spent last winter about a week, maybe 2 weeks here. And we just really like the area. It has everything that we're looking for. It's got a disc golf course not too far away and all that stuff. So, and it's still connected to the other 47 states, I feel like. You know, if we were to go Tampa or a little bit further south, I feel like you're getting a little too far to get out of Florida to where we're 45 minutes from Georgia border, if not less. But I think when you're following a tour like the Disc Golf Pro Tour, it's kind of laid out there for you. You don't get any options. You don't get any choices. So I feel like that's where I run into burnout more than what's going on now. Right now I'm playing for fun. Like I'm playing because I want to play, to where you don't really get that choice when you're playing the Pro Tour. They're just laid out and you kind of got to go there. So I think this is actually freeing me up and making me enjoy disc golf more and hopefully carrying that into the season to where I can find a routine where it's enjoyable, to where I don't have to focus on the courses so much as I can do other things, but still know how to maintain my disc golf and work and progress throughout the season as well and continue to learn. Also these tournaments, I'm not going Monday and getting ready for them. I'm kind of showing up the day before, and then practicing the course and then playing it the next day. So there are some things that I could get better at, like the tournament over the weekend. I practiced on Wednesday, then I had to leave Thursday, and then I came back and played the tournament Friday. And I would say out of the 36 holes, there's probably 12 to 14 that I completely didn't remember and just screwed them up. So that's where I think the multiple days comes into, and the familiar, just being more familiar with some of the courses on tour. So there's the plus and minus, but also it allows me to trust my instincts and do what I feel like is right in that moment, because I don't recall what the shots were.
Yeah. I mean, and it was really, I would have to think you felt a little embarrassed, the fact that you only opened with a 1070 rated round, then you dipped. You still had the hottest round two, with a 1051 rated round, and then round three, it wasn't the hottest round, but it was only 1031. So you averaged like 1052 golf or 1050 golf for the weekend. That feels like you're slipping.
That's what the opposite. Well, it's fun.
Yeah, it's funny because the first round I actually threw to some wrong baskets during that par stretch.
Don't tell me they hit off the basket or the tree and still went the wrong way for you.
They were par four, so I kind of like just threw that, like thinking I had to like make an L shape to where it was kind of more, not even, it wasn't really turning, but it's such an open course, the first course we played, that you can see multiple baskets on some of them. So. Which I talked to is Hosfeld design course. So I told him after, I was like, I'm just used to when I'm on the tour, everything's roped off. So you kind of know which direction you're going, or you might not be able to see them, but on the open courses like that, you kind of see that, to where, I was trying to remember from Wednesday when I practice it. Now it's Friday, that I just mix certain shots up. So that kind of caused some pars that first round. I was playing well the first round. And then the second round, I completely didn't remember about seven of the holes that we played. And then the final round, it's funny. It was my worst round, but I recognized the course most. But we just had some pretty poor weather. It was like 60 degrees and raining, which 60 degrees is pretty warm for a lot of areas. But when it was about 85 2 days before, and then it's raining and cold, so... And I kind of had a lead, so I just didn't want to lose it. I just wanted to make them try to win it in that rain. And Fish started out like he was going to take it. But yeah, I was able to hold off and kind of just par, par, birdie, 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 par, par. So kind of just didn't give him too much of a chance down there at the end.
Yeah, and I also noticed earlier today, you took home $1,386. There was a field of 54 open. So this is, I'll say, a standard A-tier event and then some. But I made the joke earlier a few weeks ago when we saw you and heard you playing in a few of these A tiers. You know, you talk about the routine and staying, you know, sharp and focused and learning your routine and all that stuff. And I thought that maybe you were trying to go after the money record, because in theory, if the payouts were big enough, there was an opportunity for you to, you know, possibly surpass – Kristen and or Ricky, who are, you know, roughly $5,000 or $8,000 ahead of you.
Yeah.
Did that ever cross your mind?
Well, before Pro Tour, I knew like whoever won this, like if I won it, I was going to be so far ahead. Gannon and then Rick were the three that whoever won it could really jump out in front. Cause I think I had Ricky at the time by like $14,000 or $16,000 or something. And then he won that and kind of flip flop. But no, after the Pro Tour, it's kind of near impossible to catch someone who just makes $35,000 at a tournament. But it's a money record. It's going to get broken next year or the year after. Like it's not a record that's going to stick really ever. It's just going to money's just going to keep climbing. So not one that I really see lasting too long, no matter who has it and what year it is.
I mean, nothing for nothing, and clearly not to take away from any part of her skill set. And in fact, it's just a compliment. But Kristen Tatar holding it until then later, 100%. You know, you or Rick or Gannon won.
Yep.
Kristen resetting.
She was the first ever.
Overall. Yeah.
She was the first ever to hit 100,000 in earnings. So like I knew if Kristen won it, if I won the finals, I would not be the first ever to clear $100,000. So
yeah,
that would have been the cool. I think. That would have been the only cool thing, in my opinion, would be the first. But she definitely took that.
Oh, and doubly amazing that it was an FPO player. That we have expanded our fields and have moved so quickly in the last 3 years.
She
missed
the European Open.
Two majors.
Yeah
she missed two majors, which she probably could have cleared another $7,000-$8,000.
She probably could have put it like 125.
Yeah,
probably close to there.
Yeah,
the two majors amazing. And then two or three elite series I think she missed.
So incredible effort that she had. So nonetheless, nothing to stick your nose up at in the fact that, you know, you're looking at Johnny, what does that bring you to? Just like 98,000, I think.
Probably somewhere on there, yep.
Somewhere on there for the year, which is right now it shows you at 98,952. You know, we're seeing yourself and Ricky and a few other players get really philanthropic, if I think that's the right way to use it.
Talking about money, I'm just looking. This broke your career earnings over $700,000 as well. Like, that's another bar, so to speak. Is that the highest career earnings of any? I have to assume it is.
Yeah, because right? I think I broke that 2 years ago or something, which is Klima. He was like five something. Yeah.
So, now at the highest, which is funny when we look at that compared to what we know your guaranteed contract is. But anyway,
I think,
go ahead.
I was going to say, I think Gannon's on pace to break it in like 6 years.
I mean, as you said, with the money records, it took you this long to get to 700,000.
It's taken Gannon 2 years.
Yeah. A good year will net somebody $100,000 now, probably.
Yeah.
So Gannon could break this in 6 years, 5 years.
Yeah.
Or get to this.
It's like, I agree. The money parts, it's hard to have like a real record. Like I said, I think the real cool thing would have been 100,000 be the first. And then the next one's who's going to be the first to have 1 million career earnings and then 10 million and et cetera. So,
yeah. You clearly, it's just where the money is at now. We're talking about, you know, whether it's Kristen or Rick with these $35,000 checks. That was literally a good year for many years within disc golf. I mean, we're talking just 10 or 12 years ago. That was a good year. And now they're
picking it's still a good year. Like, it's still a decent year.
You're right. It's like, still not a bad
year. I think 35,000 is probably still in the top 15 earners if you pulled that up.
Yeah.
For sure. So with that, you just said it a minute ago. You said you're playing for fun. What do you care about? Is there anything that you care about outside of the biggest titles now? Like any bars or records, like, or you just care about major titles, don't you?
Well, I mean, I care. Majors, I think, are the number one. That's the one that everyone looks at careers in any sports, you know, the Super Bowl, the World Series, all those things, you know, disc golf, it's the majors. I think the elite series are great. And that's something that was a record I looked, shot for my whole career going up. And that was, That was, I think, I forget whose record that was that I broke, but I think it was Fellberg who had the most Elite Series wins. But it was, it's interesting because they always, I feel like before the National Tour became a thing, it was Super Tours. You know, the National Tour became a thing, and then Disc Golf Pro Tour came around, and then it was Disc Golf Pro Tours or Elite Series. But for some reason, whenever they do statistics, they leave out National Tours. They kind of just talk about Pro Tours and who has the most Pro Tour wins, but they don't count the ones before. So it's like, I'm curious if that dynamic is going to carry forward to where they just want to kind of pick and choose who has the most wins in this division, or not division, but this this tour or whatever.
I feel like all the records now, that at least from a back end production standpoint, mm-hmm. from when Mo essentially hands us stats that are probably yeah. coming from Statmando, the phrasing now is ES as an Elite Series /Majors. Mm-hmm. And yep. Elite Series should include all of the Pro Tours since 2016,
yes.
and then all the National Tours as well. That's
yeah.
when they say Elite Series, that's including, you know, that era and those yeah. events. So
I like when they're all yeah, like all the ones okay. that are on the same stage, like National Tours, Disc Golf Pro Tours, like those are the same tournaments.
Yeah.
You know, they're the same kind of talent and field would show up to the National Tours as would the Pro Tour now, but there's just way more Pro Tours than there was ever National Tours. You know, I think the most we ever had was like 10 maybe, but yeah. more likely it was like 8, to now we're up to 20 Pro Tours a year, I think, or Pro Tours and Majors. So, I think, you know, there's a lot more opportunities for people to get big wins on the tour now, which is really cool. But yeah, you know, we were just talking about money, and I think there's going to be a lot of milestones now over records, you know, career milestones and things like that is how I look at these. I definitely look at majors as number one. Elite Series events are up there as well, but I look at the majors more than Elite Series, and then everything else kind of just falls in third.
Do you find it difficult for yourself to get excited for an Elite Series event? Because it really feels like you do put every ounce mm-hmm. of focus into a major. You always show up for the majors. And sometimes mm-hmm. it feels like the Elite Series, you show up the day before, 2 days before, you get a practice round in, and it's part of the nature of the tour, but you don't always look like you have all your focus at every Elite Series
event. Or your
event.
First round play takes the day off, and then you show up for charge in round two and three.
No, I was going to say, usually you play pretty well first round. It's that second round, and then you come back and charge your third round.
Yeah.
I think one thing that started to happen is we've been playing these same courses so many times that I just kind of don't focus on them, to where I just play them, and that kind of gets me in trouble, to where I need to focus on them, one, but I need to find a way where I find it enjoyable to play them, and like put pressure on myself to play them instead of just throwing the shots that I've thrown for the last couple of years. And that's kind of something I started to realize towards the end of this year. And I think COVID, when we had the pandemic and stuff, it took a lot of the competitive side away from me and just threw a lot of things up in the air, to where it's like, what's next? And I think that kind of really took a toll on my competitive edge. Because when we came back, it was just kind of, all right, Europe's not happening. Worlds, who knows? It got canceled 1 year. So it was kind of a lot of unsure things going on, to where now it's like everything feels like it's back. This year it felt like it was more back, but European Open was still up in question. So this year, I think towards the end of the year, especially after European Open, it was like, all right, like I need to figure out a routine. I need to figure out this that's going to make me want to focus and show up to all these events, because there's 20 to 25 events that the top players are playing. And it is easy to kind of just play the tournament and not compete and be there fully. So I want to find a way where I'm enjoying each trip that I'm going on. And that's kind of why I want to be more athletic, to where I'm doing more stuff off the course that I can be competitive in as well. And not just be like, all right, I'm just here for disc golf and that's it. Because it kind of just becomes and feels like it's a job more than like, this is my passion. I'm doing it because I love it. And then secondly, I'm getting paid for it. So that's kind of what I need to shift towards.
Is this your low key way of saying you're transitioning out of disc golf and you're taking pickleball that much more seriously? I mean, you guys are playing it what appears to be every single night. And I know that happens a lot on tour, but as I'm seeing all the Instagram stories these days, it seems like every night pickleball is happening down there as well. And I thought I just saw Jonathan Gomez, right? He just won a pickleball tournament this weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, seemed like it was just his buddies. It seemed like he just beat his buddies. That's what it looked like.
I think it was like age 35 and up. And then I forget how they rank it, like 3.5 or something to 4.
I did hear, I've heard it's like, like that's how the rating system is.
And you
like
had to
3,
have so
3.
Many
3. 5,
hours
4.
Behind a camera to be eligible. It's a really exclusive division. No, regardless.
Well, then, the question remains. Yeah, that's awesome.
Is pickleball next?
Who knows? No. I mean, I enjoy playing it. And I feel like it's like the statewide sport of Florida. Uh-huh. It's like mandatory that you play down there. Yep. During the tournaments and the night, like after the rounds and at dark or whatever, we would just go and play each night after the tournament rounds. And it was just something to do, you know, we didn't need the sun. We just needed lights, you know, to where disc golf, like you need the sun really to play and enjoy it and get better. To where we just played under the lights. And there was a solid probably 8 to 12 of us each night playing, And it's actually competitive between the men and women, you know. So it was a lot of fun to where the gap's not huge there between all of us. So yeah, we just, you know, and you got a partner and you got a team, so you can kind of make it fair in some way. You know, you put the one and 10 together, and they could play like the 5 and 6 or whatever, or you know, 4 and 5. So
okay, this is a 2-part question then. Mm-hmm. Who's the best pickleballer in the group that you've been playing in the last few weeks? Who's the best among that group?
Sullivan Tipton for sure. Okay. And the ones that we've been playing in Florida. I've been trash talking Melton for sure.
Well, and then that leads
and then
to my follow-up,
Sully and I
can
take down Melton and whoever pretty easily.
Yeah. Who's the best overall that like plays disc golf that you've seen in played against or interacted with? Who is Melton?
There's a lot of
talent. No, it's probably Sully. Okay, from all the ones that I played with. Yeah, Sully. Okay.
Did he play in the tournament with Madison when she talked about playing in one? Do you know? Is that possible?
Who? Sully?
I know Madison talked about playing in a tournament like a year ago, and she said she had a pretty solid partner. And I don't remember if it was him or not, but maybe not.
I'm not sure. I didn't ask too many questions. But yeah, him and I, we teamed up together and we've played against each other, and he's really good. But yeah, best person I've played pickleball with so far, for sure. And we've teamed up before, and we played here in Jacksonville. He came through and we played some really good people. Him and I, we've been beat twice. So
the internet, the internet's asking who's the worst.
Who's the worst I've played with?
Who needs the most help?
Name. Oh shoot, Bradley Williams is the worst I've seen play.
What?
But that's because I was with him for his first time. Oh, so
I mean, because so he's a damn, like, he's such a skilled human.
That's if I'm being fair, like I have maybe only seen 20 people play. But like some were so new, like Mason Ford was new and he wasn't that good.
I could see Bradley taking a while on that backhand. He's really slow. Very methodical.
Yeah. But I haven't played with a whole lot of people, but those are just two people that I saw like their first 1 to 10 times playing. So, I can say the worst. I'm not saying they're bad, but they're the worst that I've played with for sure, because it was really early in them learning pickleball.
Okay. How much athleticism it you know, because clearly this is played and spans so many ages, and I somewhat liken it to a racquetball where you don't have to be the most athletic, but if your strategy and your shot shaping is better, then the raw athleticism is almost secondary. Is that a fair way to word it? How would you describe it to somebody?
I think you can really compete if you're athletic, because you can get to the ball and get around. So it's like a quick first or second step is really big, because that'll get you to a lot of balls. But then it's like you got to have hand-eye coordination to some degree and be able to control where you're hitting the ball, because you don't want to just kind of hit it back and forth. You need to actually be keeping it low, or you're just going to get the ball slammed on you all day, and that's not fun. I mean, you need a little bit, but also if you can just get to the net, you just got to be quick and have some quick reflexes. Like, that's kind of how when I played against Dixon Jower, he would just get up to the net and he was just quick with his hands. He wasn't like sprinting and getting lobs or anything like that, but he was just on that net and he was just stopping anything from getting by him. So I think there's multiple ways that you can play.
Yeah, and we've seen how serious.
Quick feet or quick hands.
I was going to say,
he had a headband on.
At the country club there. Obviously it has the disc golf, but that immediately then fills up with disc golfers as they have dedicated pickleball courts over at the country club in Emporia. And they have lights and everything else. And I feel like that place is just packed the entire week.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not going to lie. It is a really good workout because it's like quick sprint, quick sprint, quick sprint, quick sprint. So, you know, you do get drenched in sweat pretty quickly if you're actually playing and getting into it instead of, you know, just kind of hitting the ball back and forth. But if you're actually playing matches, it's like you feel it. You feel it for sure.
So that has to lead to my final pickleball related question, which is, have we seen any real injuries? Because the first time somebody legitimately hurts themselves,
blows out a knee,
taken out of an event or taken out of the year, there's going to be this like, those idiots shouldn't have been playing pickleball. You know, it's just wow. Human nature then to be like, we told you so. Have we seen any injuries or do people not take it serious enough?
I'm not sure with pickleball, but like, you know, at Waco, they had that kickball match. Des Moines. Des Moines. Yeah. Like Luke Humphreys, like, I don't know if he pulled anything in his leg, but he had to drop out of the tournament because of some leg injury, and some people were feeling it the next day. So I'm sure that injuries can happen with everything, you know, even spike ball and pickleball and kickball.
Rock climbing.
Anything. I mean, yeah.
All these things everybody loves to do, anything, right?
Pick up game of basketball. I mean, anyone could blow out an ankle or a knee.
I mean, you see in professional baseball, like people will fall out of their tub, you know, and then break a bone in their hand. So it's like anything can. But if you're keeping yourself in shape and being, you know, keeping yourself doing things, I think you'll be a little bit more preventative in that. But if you just go, you know, 0 to 100 into a pickleball you never played and then you're doing full sprints, yeah, you could probably pull something or do something. But just don't go 0 to 100 and take care of yourself and stretch and, you know, just take care of yourself before and after and you should be good. But yeah, is a chance that you fall and hurt yourself. But
yeah, that unintentionally will segue into a contract question, which is in a lot of sports, they have certain clauses about things people can or can't be doing in the off season or during downtime or even during the season, whatever the case might be. Your contract is obviously the largest, most significant contract that we've seen in disc golf. Are there any clauses? Are there anything that you feel like, yeah, this mirrors or mimics a professional athlete's contract? Is there anything in there that you could share
mine might have that other professional ones?
Yeah.
Not that I can think of. But I know of people who have contracts where you can't ride a motorcycle, you can't skydive, you can't ride a jet ski. But I know like that's more like baseball and stuff to where you can get hurt and they got millions and millions and millions dumped into them. Mine doesn't have anything like that. But for me personally, I know not to ride a motorcycle, jet ski. I might hop on a jet ski, but I know my limits because, you know, I don't have... I know, like, I just feel like I don't want to injure myself. Like, this is like a lifetime sport, so I want to get as much as I can out of it to where baseball, you know, 35 to 38 is about, that's old. Like, that's real old. And that's kind of where a lot of our players are now. And we don't consider them old, but we consider them kind of, you know, getting to that age. But like Sexton, I think, is 37 or 38, you know, and he's still taking top 10 at these majors or top five or wherever he's at. So we don't consider that super old in disc golf yet. But no, I don't have anything specifically, but I've been advised to avoid certain things that I may go too hard in.
I think sometimes, just hanging out with, you know, with your boy Bob Giulio and Wagner and a few of those boys, that might be in your best interest to just tamper some of your activities with those guys and you'll keep a little safer. So contract season for so many players, I don't know if you've got, you know, the T as your wife would say, or any interesting updates, or is there anything you're keeping your eye on or anything that you can share? We're not expecting you to break anyone else's big news, but is there a person of interest that you're like, hey, I wonder where blank is going? They're up for their contract. Is there anyone off the top of your head that?
Well, I mean, I think it'll be interesting because, like, what was it last year? Ricky switched, and he was like in 1 year, one or two of a 5 year deal. It wouldn't surprise me if things like that became more common.
Not staying for an entire length of your agreed upon contract. Is that what you're saying?
Sure. And I think also players are probably putting it in their contract now to where they can leave sooner, even if they do like a 5 year deal, to where it's like, okay, we could leave after 2 years. To where in other sports there's player options, team options, and things like that, to where players might start putting that in their contract and stuff. So I think there might be clauses like that that could start being in these contracts. And I think also after we've seen with when Paige left DD, or Prodigy, whichever one, it might have been both, I'm not sure. But, you know, it's not a good look when someone wants to leave and they're kind of stuck to their contract, and it just doesn't, it kind of leaves sour taste in people's mouth, to where now it might be like, all right, just go. Like, it's going to be better if we just let you go instead of like going through this little process and feud. So I can see things like that happening as well, to where if both agree, like, okay, you know, like this isn't working out how we both envision. Neither of us are truly happy with it. Like, go, like, yeah, walk away. We'll just cut ties completely and we'll just, you know, burn this contract and you're good to go.
Yeah.
I can start to see things like that on mutual agreements and such. So I think there's a lot of things that can happen, especially with the more players that we have and the more companies that get into the sport and are looking for flagship players. You know, you saw Lone Star with Nico. You know, they're looking for these players that they can hang their hat on for a couple of years and kind of make an explosive announcement like that one.
Have you heard, and again, like Terry said, you don't have to spill any beans, have you heard of anything big that we that's coming up at all that other people will be surprised about?
I've heard rumors, but I don't know anything that is pen to paper yet. But yeah, there are things that I have heard, but nothing that's been done. So
does it feel a little, yeah. I mean, should we feel a little bit, almost a little bit bored in the fact that, from a media perspective exclusively, that people are now signing these 2, 3, 5 year deals, and it's just becoming more common. It's not nearly as volatile. Like, usually November, December, everybody is, because 1 year contracts used to just be so much more common, and now people are signing for a 2 or a 3 year deal halfway through, you know, in the middle of the summer, they're announcing, oh, I'm here for another 3 years. Like, that takes away from our you know, topic.
But
right,
I feel
now,
like, we have so many top players now that those contracts are going to be spread out. Like, it's like, oh, cool, well, Gannon's up this year and then Isaac's up the next year. I don't know. What do you think, Paul?
No, I agree. I think, I mean, it could go both ways, but I also think as far as a player and a company for marketing aspects, like, you don't want to put your money and market someone if they're only there a year and you don't know if they're just going to leave. And you can see that with these commercials now. We got DGN that's playing commercials all the time. So if you have to make a brand new one, like, that's a couple $1,000s, you know, just down the drain. If you only use it for a year or 6 months or whatever, however long it takes, if they're only with you for a year. So I think it goes both ways. And then a player can feel a little bit more secure and things like that they got 3 years potentially, you know, under their belt. Yeah, like Johnny said, I think there's so many players that are coming up now. There's so many different companies that there's going to be players switching every year. Whether the money keeps going up, whether money keeps getting announced, like, everyone's trying to shoot for this, you know, what my deal was, what Ricky's deal was, Kristen and Kona, to where everyone feels like, oh, that person needs to get paid, they're going to get the bag. And it's like, that's, you got to realize, like, that's a decade of work, Paige, decade of work, like, Kona was at least a decade in the sport. Like, these are people that have been there a long time. So, you know, Gannon's in his second year as a pro. If he signs a new deal and it's six figures, like, that's huge. But don't expect, like, you know, people just to shell out $1 million for someone, even though he's young, you know, like, who knows? You know, Isaac, so like these young.
I mean, he's proven right now, but I'm saying he doesn't have that longevity. That's what I.
That's hard for a company. Like, yeah, some companies might be like, all right, we're taking this chance, but like that's a big investment for someone who's come up so fast, been there a year, and who knows? It could be the next big thing, and you just struck gold, or it could, hey, you're stuck with someone for 5 years, and they feel like their third year, they don't even want to play disc golf anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So, you know, it's interesting and, you know, this is kind of, I don't want to say it's like gambling, but like you're trying to find the next big thing. And I mean, you guys know how it is. You guys are doing that in the media. You always want to have the next big topic. You want to have, I know you want to go find the next big player. Like Terry saw Holland Hanley when she won that tournament down in Arizona. Like Terry was there filming. He's like, this girl's going to be good. Or this player is going to be good. She's something. She didn't win this by accident. And, you know, here she is, top 10, top 5 in the world or something. So, and this is her first touring year, correct?
Yeah.
Full season. Yeah. She kind of had a half season last year or whatever.
But ended up quitting her job when she never thought she would. Now sponsored multiple sponsors and is giving freaking, you know, online tutorials and clinics, you know.
Yeah.
And she's perfect for it. So,
yep. So, like, that's something Terry finds. And you know, that's something that these manufacturers probably want to find, and who knows when other sponsors get into the sport and stuff, like if they're going to be doing the same thing where they're going to just be throwing money at someone like Gannon, like, all right, that's who we're going all in on. That's who we want to be our person for the next 10 years. So you never know. I think it's going to be exciting. I think there's going to be other announcements, but I mean, those are our big contracts right now is manufacturers. So you never know who else can jump in and want to kind of have those kind of deals.
Did we just land on a money opportunity for me?
I was just about to say
insider
to be a scout.
Companies to be scouting, no, to be a scout. Scouting footage. Yeah.
Like, yep. would it not make sense for someone like Discraft or DD or Innova to be like, hey Terry, we're going to throw you an extra X grand this year because we know you go to all these smaller events. You hit this. You've got
like
your guys.
Where this is going. Yes.
And guess what? When you see someone, you call us because isn't that kind of what you did with Holland?
That's
exactly what you did with Holland. Reached out to Eric McCabe and was like, hey, there's someone here that I think might benefit your team.
Just to use her quickly as an example, in talking to Holland and having a conversation with her, of course, I thought she was, you know, an incredible person. She went on to tell me what she was throwing.
Exactly.
And then we had a conversation about, you know, what brands she currently throws and or likes and or would consider. And I happened to be a conduit where I could say, hey, if you want, I'll reach out to McCabe. A few days later, she had an offer, you know, in front of her.
But let's be honest, you could be a conduit for any team. Because you literally know everybody.
I will sell out. Show me the money. Yes, I like where this is going.
And I mean, I'll play with certain players, and Bob will be like, "Hey, can you check this player if you're playing with him or if you see him at the tournament? Like, can you see what he does good, where he struggles? Is he worth, you know, looking further into?" And you know, players like that, to where he might say, like, they've reached out to us and I just haven't seen them in person and you're at the tournaments. Like, that's kind of what a team captain role is as well, too. It's like, hey, like, check these. Like, should we pursue that player further or should we let him go? So those messages do come from the team managers and such, to where, you know, that Terry could take that role.
Yeah. So. And I like it. Hashtag Terry McGuire.
Now, granted, he was the agent and not so much the scout, but well, I'll give you that.
That doesn't lead me too far, though, from asking Paul something else that was already brewing was, where are you in terms of an agent, in terms of representation, in terms of
third-party sponsorships?
Yeah, because you're where you are within your contract now, which is, what, it's fifth year?
So my original one, this would be my, this 2023 would have been my final year for my original 4-year deal. So I'm only in year two of my 10 year.
You're only in two of, okay.
Because he re-signed for 10 full years at the time. It wasn't an extension. So
this one ends when I'm 40.
Jeez. Okay. So
sorry, Discraft.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So where does, we'll have to see how that plays out. Where does that leave you for other deals, and what does that look like? I mean, obviously, disc and sponsorship of Discraft is all locked and loaded. But who do you have a conversation about if an Under Armour or a a Voss.
Yeah, I think there's so many options for sponsors. Just looking at this background that I have, it just kind of makes me think of like vacations or flights or like airlines and things like that. Like there's so many options there, and you mentioned water, snacks, mm-hmm. like. There's so many options. I feel like that someone could be a representation for them to where they feel like it's beneficial for their company. And they think, when people do sponsorships, they're paying someone money because they think that person's going to bring them more money. Like that's business. Mm-hmm. So there are things that could work, but my biggest goal this winter is finding a real agent. I don't think we have a real agent in disc golf. I think we have a lot of people that are managers and lawyers that know how to negotiate deals, but I don't think we have a real agent in the world of disc golf yet. So that is one of my main goals this winter is to get a official agent that has worked with athletes from baseball, from golf, basketball, all these sports. So that is one of my main goals. I've talked to one actually last week. Potentially another one here soon, but that is one of my big goals.
I was going to ask if you've reached out to some of the major representation firms with, I think, CAA, and I forget what some of the other ones are these days.
Because there's so many.
They've changed and merged, but I'm thinking just like some of the massive ones. Mm-hmm. Have you tried reaching mm-hmm. out to them and being like, hey, I'm who I am?
I've talked to last year I had Wasserman, but that didn't really fully work out because all the sports came back, I feel like, and it was a busy time for them because they had all their athletes still. Had another buddy that works at a big company, but he, again, in season, they got all their athletes and it's hard. Definitely talking to one right now, and I would love to make something happen and work and just feel like I have someone behind me that is actually really excited about going into a new sport and seeing what they can do, because that's the hardest thing is they're entering a new sport that no one else has entered. So you're going to be struck with a lot of no's. So you got to have someone that's willing to accept that and just want to have fun with that challenge of what can I do in this sport? I want to be the first one to do it, and I want to do it at the best of my ability. So it's like finding someone that has that drive and isn't scared to do that. It's kind of a interview process at the same time of, we're both going to have to be on board, because even if they bring me a deal at the end of the day, I still have to be like, yeah, that's something I want. That's something I really like, and I want to support that, because they might bring me five deals and I might not necessarily the money side, but the product or whatever is in, the offer I might not be a big fan of.
Yeah, it doesn't align.
Exactly. So it's like it takes both to really agree on something. And I mean, it takes three parties, the agent, the player, and then the company that's doing the sponsorship. So, I mean, that's it's hard to get all three of those to align.
Well,
because I can tell you I had some offers last year, but they just weren't things that I wanted to promote or be a part of. And that was before there was even like number talks. It's like, no, I don't necessarily want to do that.
I nailed CAA, by the way. I looked it up, and it's like one of the largest.
There you go.
Artist agency, football, baseball, nice. Basketball, all the sports.
Yeah. I think if you look up Wasserman, they're like top five too.
Yep.
But they're huge.
As Terry McGuire, I would just say stay away from Sports Management International, where it worked. You don't want to send Bob Sugar over there to help you out.
Oh, jeez.
You need Terry McGuire. I think about, you've obviously helped lead the way and being in that position of having these opportunities. Then you've openly talked about the upsides and the downsides to selling ourselves short, selling some of our own athletes, selling themselves short. And I think of lots of different companies, whether it's Adidas and Adidas Terex and how that kind of mm-hmm. unfolded and meld into something that wasn't quite, how it started. Obviously you've had smaller things. I feel like with a Celsius, a McCaid, those are just a few that I can think about, more recently off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you're just like, you're immediately shooting down that just like you just mentioned,
or categories
or or just something yeah. that just doesn't interest you at all?
So like the first thing, so I was with Celsius. I really enjoyed that. The thing that happens to some of these companies too is they get new like media marketing people like all the time. And so you just lose a contact or you might just like, they might want to go a different direction because they feel like that one wasn't working. So Celsius, I did 6 months with them and that was like a back and forth for like maybe a month of negotiating because they actually approached me and then me and my manager, we talked with them and we found a deal. So it's easier when I had a manager rather than an agent. So like an agent would go out and get those deals to where a manager can kind of just negotiate them, figure it out. And we had a lawyer involved too. So anyways, it was like back and forth for about a month negotiating and things like that. And we finally settled on a number and when it would start. And, sorry, I forgot where I was going with it, but yeah, but that was one that I liked. And then, earlier this year we had G Fuel reach out and the first thing I do is like, I'm like, I want to try the products. I want to see if I like it. Like, so G Fuel sent a ton of stuff, products to try, but I just wasn't a big fan of them. Some people like them and I tried them and I was just like, you know, this ain't it. So I passed on it. I had CBD products and, just passed on them. A lot of YouTube ads and things like that to where they wanted to be heavy on YouTube and stuff like that. And I was just like, I can't promise that I'll be able to put a YouTube video out a month.
Sure.
And you know, if you want to do some other things, like we can work on something, but I can't promise you that. And so I would just pass on it because they would really want to do that.
Yeah. And just as two quick examples from the little YouTube that I watch, I think immediately of like your Manscaped, which obviously fits a lot of our
demographic. Yeah, I would not do that. Yeah.
And then like Mud Water is another one that I feel like sure. I see all the time or yeah. the soap, the same company that makes the soap.
There's
some that just...
Yeah, the Nutrient Greens, like the Athletic yeah. Greens or something like that, those mm-hmm. type of things.
Okay. Yeah. So not necessarily yeah. the... That
ad what's the other one? DraftKings, they always do. Yeah.
Okay, DraftKings. So the ad integration yeah. isn't something that you necessarily want to be committed to.
Not necessarily, no, because sure. there are a lot of ad read opportunities, and I'm just like, I don't want that to just take up a ton of stuff and mm-hmm. videos and stuff like that. So, sure. You know, if I was like, yeah, I'm a heavy user of the Manscaped products, like, of course I want them in my videos. I sure. use them, I use them all the time. That might be a little different, but, yeah, so there's things like that to where I've passed on those, but obviously I've taken the Celsius, I've taken McCade, and I have been working. Actually, the drop that happens Thursday has a lot of McCade in it, yep. to where we've worked together on collaborations with a lot of the polos and stuff like that. To where that's a connection that we made and we've kept in contact, but it just hasn't worked out for a sponsorship yet.
Okay.
Because they are a new brand. I think they started in 2019, somewhere between 2017 and 2019, I think. So they're a new company. They're a golf concept company and that's their focus. Even though, you know, they helped me out in disc golf, they still need to get their self established in golf. You know, until they feel like they are where they are, all right, let's go check out disc golf and see, you know, carry it over there. So until they feel like that's the route that they want to go, we'll probably just have a close contact and I really, really like their stuff. I wear it probably a majority of the clothes that I wear. It just seems like it fits the best and that's what I enjoy wearing. Other than that, there's no money. I can't think of anything else on top of my head.
No, that's
or what you mentioned. But
no, that's
well, and that's, I mean, I think as someone just said on the board, somebody says they respect you more knowing that you, you know, you want to align with companies, whether it's their branding or their value mm-hmm. or not, you know, it's not just a check that you're concerned about. You definitely want you want to have products that you believe in.
Oh, yeah.
You feel,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
You know,
and how I look at it, too, is I say this to quite a few players, too, and people, that do try to get sponsors for players is for me, I know I'm at the top. I know I'm at the top of the sport, you know, when it comes to sponsorship and things like that, like people want my name next to their products and mm-hmm. pushing their products if possible, because of whether it's Instagram, YouTube, playing, whatever, to where I know, like I'm just going to say, use Smashbox as an example. If Smashbox wants to sponsor me and you guys are offering me $5,000 for the year, and I'm like, all right, cool, $5,000, put your name on it back. I set the bar for the field. You know, like now, if Smashbox wants to sponsor, you know, 25th player in the world, like you guys aren't sponsoring for $5,000. You're going like, we'll give you $1,000 to wear our name. Like I set the bar at $5,000. So why would you guys pay someone else more? Yeah, whatever, $250. Why would you guys pay anyone else more than $5,000 if you're already paying the person at the top $5,000? You know, so like, yeah. I feel like I'm setting that bar. So if I'm not saying no to a lot of these deals, I feel like I have that pressure on me to establish these high numbers for these players that are growing their brand or growing their career in disc golf. So I do have to say no to a lot. If I just accept a ton, you know, $500 sponsorships, I feel like that's lowering everyone else's value.
Yeah, and I'll say you've been very consistent with that message. And some may say, well, that's easy for you to say. You get to, you know, pick and choose who you want. But the bigger picture is that for everything you just explained, makes perfect sense that as much as we love the idea of everyone getting some form of sponsorships, and it's so exciting to get a sponsor, yet you have to still have that value that is worth it to them and to you. Yeah. And don't just immediately attach yourself. Now, it might be your friends, and that's one thing, but don't just sell out to everybody that's willing to offer you $100 for the year or, you know, a free shirt.
Well, and if I say, like, let's say we'll go back to Smashbox. So you guys offer me $5,000. I say, no, like, I'm looking more for like 50 or 100,000. You're going to take your 5,000 and go sign that 25th player in the world for 5,000. So instead of him getting 250, now he's getting a $5,000 offer. You know, like it does put me in a different spot, but you know, now I'm by saying no, you might go approach another player and give him that money you offered me because you see a different value in that 25th player now.
Yeah, and you know, you graciously let somebody else get some of that bag because you passed on us. You're a sweetheart. You're a real sweetheart. No, we could not have a show tonight in this timing with a conversation about McCaid and all the drops that are coming out. There has been, so we couldn't let this go. There has been a lot
of opinions, chatter,
a lot of opinions about the clothing line that drops in a couple days. This is an unpaid ad for that, by the way, on the 25th. No, but there's been a lot of chatter. There's been a lot of people that do like it, but I feel like even more that have not loved it. So here's
or a great, expected something different.
Yeah, here's a great opportunity to like give us your thought process and a little pull back the curtain. Give us some insight as to what we're seeing and why we're seeing it, because there's a lot of opinions on it, and there always will be, but it seems like more than normal.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I don't think there's much going on in disc golf right now, so everyone needs to find something to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, our big problems are what's Paul McBeth wearing. Like, I guess we're in a pretty good spot, right?
Yeah, so I think people need to put their comments somewhere, so I don't mind.
Okay.
But no, I mean, I think it's something that's not in disc golf. You know, like me growing up in Southern California, a lot of it was skate, streetwear, surfing. Like a lot of my first clothing were based on like Huntington Beach and like that surf vibe and like, you know, kind of what I saw. Yeah, what I saw growing up.
Look west. Yep.
So for the last like 3 or 4 years since I've had, last 3 years, like that's what a lot of my clothing has been behind. And for me growing up, it was a lot of like skateboard and like I said, like that kind of influence. So this is the first time where I kind of went that way. And then some of the other ones kind of have that metal rock, you can call it, you know, a little bit more aggressive skate style, which, again, it's not for everyone. Not everyone wears the same style of clothing, and that's fine. But there is mixed in, you know, you got the McCaid polos and such and some other things. But it just, I feel like there's not a big variety in disc golf right now. And that's fine. Like, oh, there it is.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't.
You could put it in the background in the green screen. There you go.
Don't tempt me, Paul.
We're going to make something work here. Johnny V, for our audio listeners, is trying to pull up, you know, the what it's listed as the Paul McBeth Made in LA collection.
That doesn't look great.
So you can kind of see on the like the white shirt with the PM and the palm trees and stuff. It actually has like from where I grew up in Huntington Beach. It's got the freeway system to downtown LA and stuff. And like, this is what this is where I grew up. This is where disc golf started in LA, in Pasadena, California, LA County. I grew up in Southern California. Like, this is kind of where it all started for me and where disc golf started. So it's just a lot of influences of companies and brands that I've worn throughout my life. And, you know, it's not for everyone, you know, Southern California gets a lot of hate anyways. So sure. it makes sense like that. It's not for everyone, and that's okay. Like, I'm not, no one's being forced to buy it or forced to wear it, you know, and it's a style that I like, but I also wear polos all the time too, mm-hmm. you know? So I want to wear things that are off the course, and I want something that I can wear too. That's not just always my name. I really like those sweatshirts though. On
yeah,
the bottom
and,
right
and now we've got pulled up a bunch of these yeah. sweatshirts in what's called the Six Time collection. Mm-hmm. You know, and maybe it's a little bit of the colors. I see the yeah. red, the white, the black. I go to yep. a very, you know, Chicago Bulls.
Sure.
You know,
late 90s.
Obviously, you're, you know, like you just said, an LA guy. You think of the, you know, the Lakers or whomever, you know, out of Chicago, mm-hmm. out of California. But do you ever, I also feel like there's a little Jordan influence in some of your style too sometimes, no? Or am I just making
I think
that
that's, no, I definitely think there is, in the sense of, not for me personally, like I think what Jordan's done is great, but I think the guys at Discraft, the majority of their colors are red, black, and white as well. Mm-hmm. So it is heavily Discraft influence as well as colors. But I don't know what it is, but everything in my life tends to fall towards those three colors. Like, I don't know. Like,
I mean, they're the disc golf guy colors too. Red, black, white.
Yeah. It's just, I guess, appealing to the eye. And red is probably the color I wear the least on the disc golf course. You know, it's probably the color you'll see me in the least.
Red kind of Sunday guy.
And white is the color I wear the least on the disc golf course. So now I'm going to have some new items that I'll probably be wearing on the disc golf course, because I got some red and I got some white. And you know, like I said, it's not for everyone. I'm not offended by what people say. It's their own opinion. And you know,
I heard was, cool, we're all hating on Paul's clothing and it's probably going to still sell out. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you kind of got that yeah. going for you.
It's just there's a specific style. I mean, it's a yeah. West Coast style. I mean, it's nothing that you or I grew up with. You know, we saw that on television and stuff like that. And it's from your...
It's very similar in Jacksonville, too. I'm not like... I see it a lot in Jacksonville on the beach, too.
Okay.
But yeah, it's... Yeah, like you said, it's definitely... People think West Coast when they see it.
Mm-hmm. Have you been surprised at how many people have been so opinionated on it though? I mean, I'm getting DMs, literally getting DMs from people being like, oh, Big Best new clothing line sucks. I'm like, first of all, what the hell yeah. are you telling me? And second of all, it's pretty easy to just not purchase it. Like, mm-hmm. it's just funny how worked up people are about it.
Yeah. I mean, one of the funniest things is I've seen comments that say like, this person should be fired and this and that. And then like, we just released some discs that are coming out as well on the, mm-hmm. on the drop. And like, this artist should get a raise, and it's the same artist. Like, it's he's expanding his portfolio.
As you know, an artist in general works off of yeah. of a theme. You know, if people really really enjoy, you know, these discs, I gotta keep double clicking.
Yeah, those ones.
Yeah, these discs right here. Like here, yeah. these are
that's the same artist.
Yeah, yeah. The starring man. The artist works off of what you ask them to. If you tell him, "Hey, I want more of a West Coast style. I want this type of font," mm-hmm. they work with it. That's what a good artist can do. If you say, "Here's the Starry Night theme," you know, I want a Van Gogh kind of thing. That's what this is. Or mm-hmm. we've got here the lightweight Macbeth signature discs. Or I think the next one is the blacked out Lunas, which
I didn't even know those were coming out. Those are sick.
Those are awesome, and I'm hoping I get some. Yeah. So put in a good word for
me Lula, too,
for Julio. Yeah,
I'm hoping I get some too.
Yeah,
Terry, I haven't gotten any of those. I've gotten the other ones, and the lightweight ones feel really good. I got some of the lightweight ones.
Like, what type of lightweight are we talking? It says here, right between 159 and 155 and 169. Yeah. Okay,
they're all ESP.
Yep.
And then the ones that people hate on really is the VI, the ones that just have the VI stamp. But what people don't realize is, I don't know the last time that Discraft has ran solid colors either. Like a solid white and a solid black. Like in premium plastic.
Sure, sure.
So, but yeah, people are hating on the stamp, which is fine. Everyone's like, we want the claws, but like, you know, we'll see if we want to do claws.
Again, I think
I'm totally kidding. We're doing the calls. We're doing the calls. Don't worry. We're doing them.
The Bulls six time. And again, I know that's maybe all far stretch, but between the colorway and the six, it just, to me, you know, that those were the connections I was making, but nonetheless.
Yeah. And we've had the claws done for the stamp and stuff done for since pretty much right after Worlds, but we just didn't have the time to do it. Like last time we did it when I won five, we did it to start the new year. And we did the four. It was when, you know, the first year I signed, you know, January, February is when they were released. So they have a routine and that's how they want to do it. And that's kind of how the six are going to do as well. So they'll be probably in people's hands to purchase in January is my guess.
Oh, the claws?
I think retailers will. Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, honestly, I'm okay if you don't do the claws. I mean, I understand it's a theme, but it's okay.
Definitely
to,
hard
six
to
claws
figure it
start
out.
To look weird.
It's okay to change it up as well. I mean, you almost don't want to flood a market with, you know, let's just do more claws and more claws and more claws. Yeah. Like, cool, I've got nine claws now. Or, you know, it's at some point it's like, cool, let's do something different.
Is there
different.
An octopus with claws?
It is one of those things where it's like you feel like it could get repetitive, but how can you make it? It's also fun to figure out how can we make it still feel like it's new? Sure. How can we make it feel like it's still exciting? So that's kind of the challenge for us too, is how can we make people still find the claws cool and fun and interesting, and some people want to collect them, some people want to throw them. You know, that's up to the people that buy them to figure out what they want to do with them.
Yeah, I'm hoping to retire on my four claw that I held on to. So yeah,
I've got one.
Those
bin,
champion,
that's it.
Those
it's
champion like rocks bin. Aren't doing well, huh?
I've got those too. I can face value on those, but and it was funny. The last time when your stuff first came out,
that.
There wasn't a ton of hype instantly. Mm-mm. And that's why I had a whole box or two or three boxes, like hundreds of them. I think I ordered like 50 or 60 of the Lunas, the Buzzes, the Zones, the Forces, the Undertakers. I got like 60 of each. I think Johnny got like 5 or 10 of each of those within that
I
order.
Got five of each one.
And I held on to most of the other ones, and people weren't losing their minds or freaking out at all, really, anything over them. So I did what I always do, which is I just stashed them, and that has turned out to be the smartest.
A great move.
Yeah, because I know a lot of people wanted to see if I even played well with Discraft first.
I wasn't worried.
All right, so I want to respect not keeping you here too long. I know you got stuff to do, so my final question, which is really just an easy softball plug for you, is give us the latest on any Paul Macbeth Foundation news, accomplishments, projects. Where are we at with that?
Yeah, so they either left yesterday or today, but we have a team in Africa right now. It's going to Uganda, and they're going to Uganda, but they're installing courses in Uganda and Kenya. And what's really cool about that is there is a huge university meet to where I think all the universities in Africa are coming to Uganda to meet. And the team that's going there is going to teach disc golf to potentially thousands from all over Africa that are attending this university meetup. And I think it's an athletic thing, I believe. So there's going to be a lot of athletes there. I wish I knew all the details, but I've been at tournaments, so I missed the last couple of meetings, but that's on me.
Fair enough.
But yeah, so Chandler Fry's there, Missy Gannon's there. And so those are two that I'll probably be updating a lot, depending on what kind of cell service and stuff like they got, or if they're doing videos that they might post later. But yeah, we got team in Uganda right now that's going to be teaching disc golf, installing disc golf course, and they're going to be there for 2 weeks, I believe. So I'm looking forward to hearing, and Chandler will probably be one to keep up on social media. I know we made a video not that long ago. So that's the last one this year in 2022. 2023, we definitely have some projects lined up. For me personally, I'm going to be going to Mexico to play the first PDJ event at the Paul Macbeth Foundation course down there. Mm-hmm. I think it's February 9th through 11th.
Okay.
So that's in La Paz, Mexico. And then yeah, Guatemala had a PDJ tournament not that long ago where Zoe and Dustin and a few were there, and they taught disc golf to a couple hundred kids there, if not close to 1,000, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah. So a lot of people they taught disc golf because I think they went beyond just the area this time. They went and explored some other schools and regions in Guatemala. And I think Nicaragua was another one that we were putting a course in this year. And I think we're going to send a team there. Hopefully Kevin Jones. Kevin Jones has said if we ever go to Nicaragua, he wants to be involved. So
yeah, because he
spent a year there or something.
Yeah,
or
he was there. Yep. That's where he learned all the Spanish and everything. Hopefully we can get Kevin Jones to that one.
Did you expect to have this much expanse this quickly with the Paul McBeth Foundation? Like, obviously there's optimal situations, but is this what you saw when you did this soon? Because I feel like every 2 months there's a new course going in from you.
Yeah. So when we originally talked about setting this up, we were expecting 2023 to be our first project. So we thought we were going to have to fund and get everything up and get out of the logistics. And, 2021, because it was still COVID and all that stuff, like the pandemic had still been in effect. But we were like, you know what? So I think Trump was just about to leave office. There were easy.
Everybody, easy. Take it down a notch, Terry.
Yeah. So he was just about to get out of office, and apparently it was that was the time to like try to really get this nonprofit off the ground because he was very on board with nonprofits and stuff like that. So so we kind of expedited that, and then we thought the project. We're like, all right, we'll just get this in the works, and we'll go and start to build it. But there was such a positive feedback from everyone in disc golf that we went all in right then and there instead of waiting and trying to build it. And I think we have like 10 courses in the ground or not. And we were talking like we could go bigger if we want to, but man, we're putting, you know, 4 to 6 courses in a year. We're having the talks right now, and next month we have a board meeting or a retreat to where we're going to go over that. Is do we want to push this up another level and do more courses in a year? But we might have to double in size, or do we want to just keep it how we're going now, put in 4 to 6 projects a year? Like we did Camden, New Jersey this year, the 2 courses in Uganda, the 1 in Kenya, Nicaragua, and then I'm forgetting one. There was one more, but about 5 or 6 projects this year. So
Chicago, right?
Chicago was last year. So last year was Mexico, Chicago, Guatemala, Colombia. So we did 4 last year for sure. Potentially more because there are more. There's a lot more that we're helping out that aren't projects, but we might be helping fund them, get baskets, or just do things to where they might need a little bit more help.
Yeah, I was
the big
like
projects
a
are where.
Montenegro.
Montenegro was this year, the one that I forgot. Actually, helping them be sustainable, not just put a course in the ground and let it go. And here you guys go. Enjoy. Hopefully it stays there. But keeping up and maintaining and just keeping them sustainable and help promotion as long as we can until they feel like they can just, all right, we're ready to take it all and do their thing with it. So, it's been incredible to see. And the first one we did in Mexico, it's like some of the people there that learned disc golf when we introduced it with the foundation are playing tournaments in other parts of Mexico. Some are going down to, I think one or two might have went down to Guatemala. But these projects are intersecting with each other now too. And they're like going and supporting each other, you know, not just like not that they just know disc golf now, but they're going like, oh, Mexico people are like, let's go to Colombia or like, let's go to Mexico. And, they're coming together in a way too, to where, I mean, they're thousands of miles apart too. So it's just incredible to see how much it's grown and I'm looking forward to doing that one in Mexico. So if anyone wants to come down as well, I'll be there.
All right. I got a cough. Sorry.
No. We're going to mute Terry while he coughs in the background.
As you said, it's crazy to think that you were hoping to have your first project in 2023. And now it sounds like you got a dozen or so, or nearly a 10 pack in the can, and obviously a ton more on the horizon, and the support that continues to roll in, and so many different entities and people. I said that from day one, the fact that it's not just a Discraft, you know, underwritten project. Yes. And or themed. I know you've worked very closely with Doug Bjerkus, just as one example. You've worked with Discmania. You know, the fact that you're, you know, cross-branding these and a little bit agnostic to the various brands, I think it just proves that there's a bigger overarching goal and success that can come of it because of that, and not just being, you know, stuck in one lane, I think is one of my favorite parts about it. Of course, you're doing all these incredible things, but the fact that you're reaching across the aisle, so to speak, and having all these people involved, I think is pretty awesome.
Yeah. And the one thing to speak on that is I got to be thankful for Discraft, because they are open to that and they know disc golf goes beyond me. It goes beyond Discraft. Like, disc golf it's a worldwide thing. And no matter what, if Discraft's in disc golf, they're always going to have competition. So why not grow the sport together? And this is some way that they're growing it well beyond just here in the U.S. You know, they're based here in the U.S. We're doing projects in the U.S., but you know, all these other countries that we've reached and be able to bring the opportunity to disc golf to. Because I know disc golf has the opportunity that you can become a professional player. It has the opportunity to where it can save so many lives and just find something that they need to do to where they can take their mind off certain things or find something that they can interact with other people. And you know, there's so many of those. Disc golf saved my life story, but also it's got job opportunities. So I think there's just so many different ways that it can just bring opportunity to people that we don't even know need that. So I'm thankful for Discraft for seeing that and allowing me to do this, and thankful for all the other supporters who have been a part of it. You know, like you mentioned, Dynamic Disc and Doug Bjerkus and Ledge Stone and there's so many other companies that we haven't even worked with yet. Sure. You know, Discmania has been a big help, but there's so many other disc manufacturers that we haven't worked with, and basket manufacturers as well.
Yeah, well, and like you said, the impact are felt both, you know, are both obvious and maybe even a little more subdued and hidden, but they're all there. Yep. And I think that's what's been so incredible. So, you know.
Last thing, too, I was going to say, if you're free February 9th through 11th, I don't think they have anyone filming that event yet. So I don't know if you have anything on your schedule.
I might be in Thailand.
I was going to say, is that some money?
What a possible objection. But let me double check schedules. Anything's possible. Let me double check and see what is going on. But it's just incredible that the expansion continues to happen the way that it has. I know Dustin Leatherman had just reached out a few weeks ago, asking or telling us some of the things that are in the works. So it's great to hear it
He is someone that would be good to get on for 30 minutes and just explain everything that's going on with the foundation. He's in the know. He is actually the executive. Yeah.
So yeah, I totally agree. We'll have him on and we'll talk about know, exactly where some projects are at, and then what, you know, because that's always the first question is people say, how do we learn more? How do we participate? How do we become, you know, a factor here and be a part of it? And I think that's
PaulMcBethFoundation.org.
All right. Well, Paul, we wish you the best of luck on your drop this week. Hopefully somebody buys at least a shirt of yours.
Maybe one or two.
I know you're going to just be sitting there with your phone hoping that extra
the day after
$27 goes into your account. But in all seriousness, we appreciate you joining us, giving us some insights. It's funny how little we talked about disc golf but yet everything else. And there's no more better person to give us those insights behind the scenes. And the entire world appreciates it and your honesty and how transparent you are with everything. So enjoy some time on the pickleball courts, and we look forward to probably catching up with you in another month or so, maybe.
Yep, thank you, and happy Thanksgiving to you guys and anyone else that celebrates here in the U.S. So thank you all and for letting me be here, and I'll see you guys next year.
All right,
say hi to the family. Say hi to Nick there for us. All that good stuff.
Thank you to everybody. Appreciate you. It. Have a good night. See ya.
All right. See ya.
And Paul McBeth, your six-time world champion.
I'm thankful for Paul.
I wish he'd just get his shit together.
I mean,
okay, maybe not.
I don't,
in all seriousness,
I don't know if there's anyone that has their stuff together more than him, honestly. I mean,
yeah, and if he doesn't, he's
got a person for it.
He's got a team and a person for it, and that's equally as admirable as, you know, if you can't do something, find somebody else that can.
Shout out to Zach at the Paul Macbeth Foundation, who I was working with Skip Ace to do fundraising for the Paul Macbeth Foundation, sending out all of the prizes this week. They had to wait because Paul donated his players pack for the USCGC, which was an awesome players pack. It came with an umbrella, like a bag, some discs, all sorts of other goodies that were inside. But the problem was they couldn't get his players pack until he came, I think it was like down to Florida to get it for Thanksgiving during the move. And so there was a little bit of delay on it, but ultimately I believe that all went out this week. So shout out to Zach. I appreciate everything that you do for the Paul Macbeth Foundation.
Well, it was great. Now, I know I teased it out there just a few moments ago in the chat. And I don't know how we top it. You go... a night of world champions, and I'm just going to say that we're going to have another world champion. He's going to get himself set up in a moment, and then we're going to bring him into the show. So there's one hint.
But is he doing it from the beach?
He is a world champion. I don't know if he's in a beach. I know he enjoys some time in the water, near the water.
He does.
And is an outdoorsy type. But a world champion is
retirement's
be,
treating him well.
is going to be joining us here very soon. And some guesses that are coming in include Avery Jenkins, Nate Doss. I saw Nate was playing this last weekend out in California. It looks like I saw a shot from top of the world. He was playing with Wes from Revolution, a huge band. I know they're good friends, and they were able to get a casual round in out there. Nate was a guest. James Conrad has been a guest. You know James enjoys nature and the water. Felberg, Climo, a couple solid guesses. Dave Felberg. I haven't seen Dave Felberg at a beach. I've seen Ken Climo plenty of times beaching it up in one way or another. Greg Barsby, that's another good question or a good suggestion. But looks like we're ready for a 2010
multiple major winner
and world champion and coach over at Emporia State University. We've got EMAC Eric McCabe.
What's going on, guys? How you doing? Sorry to disappoint everybody.
Not at all.
We just ran through every other champion from the last 20 years. Didn't mention Mr. Eric, but
well, we threw him off. To be fair, now some of our viewers weren't around in 2010. They weren't playing disc golf. You already racked up a world title and then hopped right back in your element and said, let's grind it out some more back in those days. Back in those days, EMAC. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well. How about you guys?
We are great.
So do we call you champ? Do we call you coach? What's
Mr. Designer, sir?
Mr. Designer, sir. Mr. Alaska. Do you make the kids call you champ, or they call you coach, or they call you Eric?
Oh, they call me coach, and everybody at ESU on the athletics calls me coach as well. Which we'll get into it, I'm sure, here in a little bit. But one really cool thing about this whole program is it's not a club; it's working with the athletics. So it's, you know, I'm having monthly meetings with the head coach of the football team, the basketball team, the volleyball team. So it's not just like, yeah, hey guys, we're going to do this. You know, the ESU is doing it right. You know, they brought me in. I'm on the payroll at Emporia State University. They gave me scholarships for every one of my players. So all of my players have scholarship money to go to college and get an education and play disc golf. And it's been awesome. It's been fantastic.
So are you tenured yet? Did that happen already? No? Okay.
Already?
So,
get that sweet pension.
Yeah. So break down, I mean, I know you just touched on it, but what did ESU have to do to make this type of, or what does this commitment mean is a better question. What does this commitment mean to going all in on such a significant level? How did those conversations come about to say, hey, this isn't just going to just be a club sport. This isn't going to be just, you know, 10 guys that are just hoping to show up for free spring break money like Johnny V and I did in 1998. Like, right. This is obviously serious. So how did those conversations get started?
So this past summer, it was actually while I was in Alaska, Doug Bierkus had called me and asked me if I had any interest in becoming the head coach of the Emporia State disc golf team. And I had mentioned, yeah, you know, let's hear some details on it. What are their thoughts? What do they want to do with it? How serious do they want to be with it? They have some money funding coming in from the city of Emporia as well. And Dynamic Discs is obviously on board as well. But it's just been, it's unique, right? It's a unique situation. There's the collegiate scene is getting so big. I mean, there's so many regional events out there right now. The national championship every year has been growing into this massive event. And now people kind of have a choice, right? You know, if here's the thing, if you're a solid disc golfer out of high school, you do have a couple options, right? If you're a Gannon Burr, you're probably not going to go to college. You're probably just going to hit the road and start, you know, cashing checks, I guess you would say. But but there's a lot to be said for these players that are going to school and getting an education to potentially fall back on. And the scene, the college scene is amazing. The disc golfers, how good these players are now, how much younger they're getting is just, it's phenomenal. It truly is.
Is your team made up mostly of people who already knew the sport and came in and you're helping out, or do you have anybody that just like that didn't know the sport coming in and it's like, hey, I want to join the disc golf team at ESU and I've got Eric McCabe here to teach me how to play?
So I have 8 guys and 2 gals, and it makes up four guys on each the D1 and the D2 team, or A and B, however you want to look at it. Every one of them knew what disc golf was. You know, we had tryouts over the summer where I think we had 50 people come out and try out for this disc golf team. So we had a lot of people interested that were already enrolled. I did convince a few players to enroll in school. One of them, Alexis, he's one of our guys. He worked at Dynamic and he was looking for something to do. Looking at the next chapter in life, and going to school was absolutely one of those. So I've got him going to school. We had a guy, Grant Yoder, is another one of our players that moved to Emporia for disc golf. His reasoning was the tuition was about the same as the colleges in his area, but coming to Kansas, he could play disc golf. So that was one of his big reasons, you know. So all of my guys had played disc golf. It was my 2 girls. The one of them had played disc golf. I actually met her on the disc golf course. She is a starter on the volleyball team, actually. So she's very athletic. Just played disc golf casually for fun, those kind of things. But Rebecca, her name's Rebecca Thompson. She is brand new. This girl has been playing disc golf for 3 weeks now. And we all took a trip to Jonesboro last weekend for an event. And her first ever, can you imagine this? Her first ever competitive round of disc golf was played on the FPO layout at Jonesboro.
She just saw what Kristen Tatar did and just had to, you just say, okay, just do what she did.
Because Emporia isn't short. I mean, you guys have the 2 or 3, arguably within, you know, 20 minutes, pretty championship caliber courses if you want to play them. But you also have every corner has a disc golf basket. Exactly. But, you know, a lot of beginner friendly courses. So did she get a chance to play at like Country Club or Jones Gold beforehand, or was like, is it just like, hey, we're gonna play at the community college and then you're going to
pretty much he played a lot of a few rounds over at Hammond, which, as you know, is a 9-holer, very beginner friendly, right across the street from the Country Club. But she had never really opened up on a course and never played Jones, never played Country Club or anything like that going into this event. But the one positive thing for her was she played doubles, so it wasn't like it was all on her shoulder to go out and perform. But it was impressive. You know, these girls went out and performed and ended up in second place. I mean, they battled. I mean, I think that's kind of the nature of the beast when it comes to the women's collegiate disc golf potentially. I think there's a lot of newer players that are involved. I think even the national championships have some newer ladies involved playing that division. But it's growing, and she's hooked. We went down to Winfield this past weekend and competed in an event. We had the Kansas State Doubles Championship here in Emporia this weekend as well, and I convinced those two to play, and it wasn't a college event. They're just hooked. They just are looking for any time that they can play disc golf. So this weekend they played that, and that was at Supreme. So they both partnered up and went out and played Supreme and had a heck of a time for sure.
So you'll have to maybe make it a little bit more clear for me, because I'm thinking, like, I'd heard something about you guys are like the number one ranked team now. And
yeah,
is that, how does that work? Because is that part of like collegiate nationals? Are you going to go to, are you guys going to go to, are they still do it at the Hippodrome? No. Or they rotate, or I don't even know anymore where they play it, because they play it every year in the spring, I believe. Is that what you're qualified for? Are you like, are you going to beat the established teams that are there now? Is that what I'm hearing?
So I don't try to put expectations out for myself or the team or anything like that, because those, you know what happens when you put expectations on the line, especially if you're telling young kids, hey, we're going to win this. You know, there's a way to do it. But yeah, so the regional events that the college disc golf hosts, those are all qualifiers now. It used to be you could just sign up for the nationals. Now it's not like that. You have to qualify for it. And the event in Jonesboro that we actually attended was a qualifier. And we won that event by 6 strokes over, I think it was Mississippi State and Missouri. And Missouri was the current number one ranked team in the nation. Mm-hmm. So we took them down by 6 or 7 strokes, and they are the returning champions as well. They won nationals last year in men and women. So that's, I think, how we catapulted up into number one. We were number four after winning an event, more of a conference event, which is like what we've mainly played in up until now, is these conference events where, you know, you're going up against local schools around your area. But the season is a little weird. So it kind of goes through the winter. We don't have another event on our schedule, an official event, until February now. But we're going to use this off season to keep grinding, at least. And I got some connections with the University of Missouri to meet up in Kansas City, actually bring both teams and do some scrimmages. And it's only going to be good for both parties, right? So how the world ranking or the national rankings work, it's usually after every regional event. I think that they change those, and I think winning events every week is 100% how you stay on top, and that's what we've done. We've played 3 events, and our D1 team has won 3 events.
Well, I've been listening to all this while doing some looking around at some of the college disc golf graphics, and I know it looks like they have a few more details on their Instagram than they do on their site, and immediately I see Shelby Ebert is in the top 10. She's in 7th right now for Emporia State on the women's side. And then you can go through all the individual men's rankings as well. It looks like this was posted just a few days ago, and clearly quite active. And that's why, just as you mentioned a moment ago, you talk about a season, and we almost have to refocus and realign what a traditional season has been. You know, somewhat January to December or February
versus a school
to October.
Year season.
And now we're looking at, you know, more traditional school year type seasons. But I see obviously active. There was a Texas Collegiate Championship that's taking place. And then it says the March to Marion, the national championships in Marion, North Carolina, April 5th through the 8th. And so, it's really incredible. What this all started as when all of us were much younger, and you're just like, oh yeah, sure, college disc golf. And now we hear it's,
we had to start a club. We literally, you and I, and a couple other guys started a UWM club, which obviously wasn't official. That was just, hey, anyone could start a club for more or less anything they wanted. You just had to fill out some paperwork and then and work some things. So back then there were no teams.
Yeah, this is, you know, so much more to it. So
which means we still have some eligibility. We can sign up at ESU.
Yes,
we got four years of eligibility.
I've called EMAC a lot of things. Coach is going to be should be the next thing.
EMAC, you can shave. Sign up.
Scholarships. We can. I've got a 33-year-old playing for us right now, so we can make it happen.
Yeah. What's the master's program look like there? Could I come get a good master's degree in something?
Got a master's degree, so she graduates in December next month.
All right. Well, it sounds like I got to move to Emporia.
That's just a long commute.
Yes. I ain't that smart. I was just saying the other day, I don't know if a master's would help me at this stage in my life. I don't know if I'm helpable. Anyway, clearly, I think a huge component of this is that there was a conversation early on with Doug, the president of Dynamic Disc, the integration with the city of Emporia, the integration with Emporia State. Like, this is all very, very cohesive. And what an opportunity for you who, you know, you have these things you're really interested in and you've worn the hat of team manager, you know, some product development, course design, which is definitely a huge passion of yours. And now this on your plate where, you know, if you had a Frisbee, you know, and that represented your piece of your pie, what is college disc golf? How much of your pie is that taking up?
Ooh, that's a great question. Well, enough to have me eliminate the team manager portion of my job.
So okay.
I'm done with that point. I've moved on from that, which I'm very happy for, to be in this new role. It's kind of similar, right? You're still still overseeing players, maybe not as many. I think it was 150 or something like that I was doing before, and 10's a little easier to keep track of. But it honestly takes up quite a bit more time than you would think. So my plate is basically now just this college disc golf and course design. I'm still involved in a lot of course designs, and obviously I have all summers to do it. I have most of the winter I can do it, which is really when you want to be designing courses anyway. So it's taken up a good portion of my my time right now, and you know, I'm the one that's driving these kids to these events too. You gotta remember that. I'm like checking out vans at so get this, we for Jonesboro we had
the only one old enough to rent a car.
Right. No, I got one other guy that can do it. But no, it's giving me a car, giving me one of their vehicles to drive down there and a gas card, and here's you know a credit card for hotels for you guys to stay in and all that. So, damn, you know, Emporia State's really doing it right. I can't stress that enough. But we did have an 11 passenger van, 11 people, and all of our gear going to Jonesboro a couple weeks ago, 7.5 hour drive or something like that. So we really got to know each other.
Yeah,
it was great.
Close quarters.
Good.
Yeah.
So you drove. So does that mean you got to pick the radio station? Are you just like 90s at 9, guys? That's all we're doing.
It was 80s at 8. 80s on 8.
Wow. All right. You guys are going to hear a little Whitney Houston before she took it. Anyway, I want to dance with somebody. So that's awesome that you get to do all of that. And I think it's a fair question is, is there any implied or overt obligation for what these players are throwing?
Absolutely not. If they want free discs, they're going to throw Dynamic.
Okay.
If they want to buy a Destroyer and throw that, I'm okay with that. That's, you know, I'm not trying to hold these kids back on only throwing one particular brand. Now, I will say, Dynamic has really stepped up and given each one of them a Ranger bag, a small allotment, some apparel as well. So they're going to be looking good out there. But it's not forced on them to throw the three brands.
It'd just be funny if there was like some tax every time they go to the internet, every other brand is like three times as much to purchase, or they could get the free stuff. No, that's again, very generous. Roughly, I mean, do you feel like most people, are they leaning one way or another? Not necessarily a brand, But do a lot of people lean into DD, which seems like with you as a coach, it would be also just a familiarity thing. Like, mm-hmm. it would be that much easier to be like, hey, if I throw
I know what trespass, a trespass does.
Yeah. I mean, are they learning their own ways?
You know, that goes without saying, right? Everyone has to have an EMAC truth in their bag. But
yes, yes. If they don't throw it, you must carry it. Otherwise,
or an EMAC judge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, either one. I'm good. Uh-huh. No, not at all. Yeah, they. A lot of them have been really. I mean, a lot of them were already throwing dynamic,
sure.
Already ahead of time. You know, so yeah. And like I said, if they want the free discs, they're gonna throw our brands, and that's great. You know, if they want to, they do. If they don't, they don't. You know, one thing Dynamic is doing right now also is we have a Lucid Glimmer EMAC Truth on our website, and all the proceeds are going to the team. As well to help with, I mean, there's a lot of funds that go into it, right? There's a lot of costs of entry fees. There's hotels, gas. You know, there's just a lot of money that goes into it, apparel, all that fun stuff. So there's a fundraiser on our website as well, and the proceeds are going to the players. So it's kind of cool to see.
I wish I'd have known that. I just bought literally in the mail yesterday. I got 5 of the new Supreme. Escapes, I think.
Well, then you're not doing it right, because I saw the post from EMAC, and I was just going to say, if I can find it right now, I'm going to link to it.
I ordered them when the Supreme ones were announced, so I don't know if I saw that post yet.
See? You got to be looking for EMAC deals.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, we'll put a link to it once I can find it here in a moment. What's been the most surprising thing, and I know it's somewhat in an early stage, but for you, given this role, you know, given your experience, your knowledge in the game, and then where the game is at today versus, you know, when you won your world title even, but what's been the most surprising thing about this experience in its early stages here?
I think a couple things come to mind. I think the first thing is the success that we've had so far. You know, none of these players, a couple of them knew each other, but not very many of them had known each other going into it. And the format that they play is a little unique, so adapting to that has been pretty good. You know, it's been solid, and I think winning at Jonesboro was a big surprise for us, and it's a big motivator too as well. And I think the other thing would be how open arms everybody in Emporia State has been. You know, I work with the athletic director. That's my main contact at ESU. So in monthly meetings, it's insane. You know, we're talking budgeting. We're talking about upcoming things that are happening at Emporia State. And, you know, it's not just, we're going to do this and then let's forget about it. Right. You know, I mean, it's, you know, they're following through with it. I mean, scholarships for players. I know the Oklahoma Christian University has been doing scholarships. They did them this year as well, and I think I read somewhere that Winthrop University is looking to get into it and do some scholarship type stuff as well. So I'm just really thrilled to be in at the ground level, right, where we're starting to do this, and hopefully more universities catch on and hire a coach, an assistant coach, and give these kids salaries or scholarships technically to come to their universities. And that's what Emporia State's doing. You know, they want tuition. They want new people coming to town to get an education and live in Emporia. So it's a win-win for us, and we're really hoping that more universities catch on.
Yeah, this is multi-level in the fact that, like you just said, there's a tourism component to it. There's the school and the sheer education component to it. There's an athletic side and the sports development side of it. There's so many different layers that can all be beneficial here. How many other schools, and I know you haven't been to, you know, quite everything, but how many other schools have a dedicated coach that you would say is your equal in terms of what they're doing and the commitment that school has given to that coach? Do you feel like are you one of only 3 that exist, or are there 10 of you across the country?
I'm aware of, I'm only aware of 2 or 3 others that have an actual coach, you know, helping out with things. Now they have like captains or people that are involved in one way or the other and ironing out details and whatnot, but majority of those people are players too. So they're playing well. So As far as I know, I'm one of two or three across the country. I'm sure there's more, and I'm sure I'll learn about more and meet more. But as of right now, that's really all that I know of.
Yeah, which is crazy. And I, you know, I, funny, a few weeks ago, I kind of blathered on my own little podcast about just disc golf jobs. And now here's yet another one you can add to that list that we didn't see coming 10 or 20 years ago, that the reality is someone like yourself or having some role or capacity that's attached to having a disc golf team, you know, whether it's directly with the university or in some kind of support mechanism, it's incredible that here's yet another unique opportunity that just didn't exist years ago. And it's mind-blowing. Awesome. Almost.
Who teaches the forehand on the team?
Oh, hey! You had to go there. You, what a, ouch. I can kick him off.
That's a 2000s joke right there, because none of us threw him.
That's a fact. Hey, me and James Conrad. Me and James Conrad.
Exactly.
Felberg, too, let's be honest.
Felberg, Felberg, I was just going to say, yep.
What is that? What practice is? Do you guys go out and do like, hey, we're gonna work on putting today. We do throw 500 putts or whatever, and you know today we're gonna. Do you teach different particular shots? Is it more
mental strategies, tournament strategies?
A little bit of everything. We'll do a lot of scrimmages of like one on ones. I'll do one on ones with players if they want some help on their form or anything like that. But a lot of it with disc golf is just repetition, getting out there in a field and throwing, putting. I will say one thing that was really cool for one of our practices is we had Ricky in town, and I had Ricky come out a clinic for us, which was huge. I mean, that's just big. It just helped each one of them new players build confidence. Rebecca, the girl that I had mentioned, this was her first introduction to disc golf, was Ricky Wysocki, and learning from Ricky Wysocki. Insane, right? That just doesn't happen. And the only reason that she really got into it and wanted to play was because Shelby, our other gal, wanted to play but wouldn't be able to play in events if we didn't have another lady. And she just stepped up to the plate and said, hey, I'll do it. I'll give it a try. Let's see what happens. And she's PDGA member now and playing solo rounds by herself. And it's pretty much a big deal. It's pretty awesome.
Are you going to pull any strings to get like, we'll say like a Holland Hanley or, you know, Kona or whomever to come in, you know, some of the other
Valerie Mondahano.
Mondahano is a great example. You know, any of the other females
other
on
celebrity
the
celebrity guest coaches and helpers.
You've got a little bit of pull, I've heard.
Yeah.
Anytime one of our players, I don't care who it is coming through town, I'm going to try and get them to come out and just to talk a little bit, you know, even if it's just playing a few holes with these players, you know. The ladies' side would be fantastic to have a Val or a Kona, a Holland, any of our gals, really. Yeah. A Kristen, if she's ever in Emporia, that would be huge. But yes, absolutely. That's a no-brainer for me to have those guys and gals come in and throw some knowledge down on our players.
Yeah, it's such a, you know, obviously being not only an employee of DD and being as connected as you are to have those opportunities, not every, even your best, you know, your best colleges. I think of a Ferris State, I think of a Mizzou, you know, and I think of them and sure their location may occasionally have somebody roll through town if somebody knows somebody, but the fact that you like you just said, there's almost a contractual, you know, pat on the back and
most of the players at least come to Emporia sometime early in the season to either restock their discs or, you know, do
media
shoots or media things like that. So it's a nice little advantage you have.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm honored to be a part of it for sure. And what's going to be fun moving forward is recruiting, right? Going to junior worlds or US juniors or any junior event or, you know, whatever, and talk to these kids and say, hey, do you want to come to school? Do you want some money? I've got some money for you if you want to come play disc golf at Emporia State University. So, you know, that's another thing that I'm really looking forward to in the upcoming years.
Wow. Imagine EMAC going to like someone's house to meet the parents, like the whole recruiting visit. Like yes, Mrs. Smith, I will make sure your son gets a great education here at ESU, but you have to understand he's got to dedicate time to disc golf.
Like, and instead of opening up like a briefcase or your golf bag, you pop open a pop-up, you know, recruit basket or something, and you just set it up in their living room and like, yes, these are some of the things we can get you into.
Because I never thought about recruiting at like a junior or anything, because you've got the junior under 18. That, you know, some of those kids are probably want to go to college. Some of them, like I said, you might have your once in a generational player like Gannon Burr that's going to forego that. We know that that's going to happen, but a majority of the kids are probably going to want to have something, because they're not all Gannon Burrs, you know. We've seen that.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I mean, I've already got a couple kids on my mind of you know, seniors in high school this year that are going to be transitioning and potentially going to school next year, and I'm pretty excited about a couple of them for sure. So
sweet. Well, now that we're finally on the Terry McGuire talk, I want to talk about my finder's feet. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. Yeah.
Again, you know, I know we talked about Holland and how she was such a great fit. She, you know, threw a lot of West Side and dynamic branding, and I felt like the easiest thing in the world for me to be able to do, because it wasn't really a hard sell for you or a hard sell for her. It was just really a match
made in heaven.
A match that needed to take place. And I'm just super glad that it could. When you're looking at these college age players, and I think about how Dynamic specifically stepped up and was the title sponsor of the Maple Hill Invitational last year, a college based event where Steve brought in Mizzou and Ferris State and six other colleges, and Dynamic, he said, was basically jumped at the opportunity to be the presenting sponsor of it on I don't want to say a last minute, but on a very, you know,
tight timetable
is a good way to put it for Dodge. And put it together. It was a phenomenal event. I got to meet some of these teammates. Do you feel like it's a no-brainer that DD as a company gets more in the college hosting business? You guys already run events. That's one of the many things that you do so well. Is it now a no-brainer where you guys are hosting college-based events now with this stronger tie and bond that you have?
Oh, absolutely. And not just sponsoring events in other places, but potentially running a big regional event right in Emporia as well, you know, bringing other universities here to town. And I think that makes a whole lot of sense for us to do. The current regional event is at the farm down in Winfield, a course I designed that I'm very partial to. So I'm very excited for that one to happen this year too, but we're going to be sponsoring it. I believe we're going to be title sponsor of it as well. But talking with Derek Savory, who is our sponsorship coordinator, he's already had some universities reaching out to him to not just sponsor events, but sponsor teams as well. So there's a lot of that. A lot of these teams are looking for those kind of things, and for us to be a part of it on the ground level makes a whole lot of sense.
Cool. I can't say it enough. I know that, you know, Steve Dodge specifically had watched the college nationals, you know, in early April. I think he was saying he's kind of watching it at home throughout that weekend, and then it, like, a light bulb went off, like it always does with Dodge. He's like, "Wow, college disc golf, that needs to happen here at Maple Hill," and just like that, you know, a month later, the event was taking place, and it was pretty cool that, you know, he helped facilitate and orchestrate all of that, and it was a really good time, and a lot of people, you know, all these participants got to come play Maple Hill under some legitimate pressure and with some fun, but also some pressure. So it makes sense that DD gets on board and is a host of one or many things as well, I think.
They do it at Winthrop as well, right? Around USCGC, the Dean's Cup?
Yeah, the Dean's Cup takes place. Yep, exactly.
Yeah, the finals are usually, Saturday morning? Well, traditionally it's been Saturday morning before the round started.
I remember always pulling in for my rounds pulling in for a round one day and seeing those guys out on hole five already playing. So, that's pretty cool. To play a course like that has got to be special for those kids.
And that was the exact philosophy at Maple Hill. Yeah, it's like, hey, you're going to play the golds. And then when Steve asked at the end, he asked the winning team, he said, do you guys want to go jump in the pond? And all I kept thinking is, A, yes, of course. And B, you may or may never get a legal opportunity to again jump in that pond, especially as a champion, yeah, you're going to take it up. And of course, they all did. That was the right move for sure. All right. Is there anything else before we just quickly touch on a couple other topics that are unrelated? Anything else in college disc golf that that we or the world should know about?
Man, if you're a college student, look into the club that's potentially at your college, and if there isn't one, start one and get a team together. And you know, there's not a whole lot of backing behind it or funding that you really need to have to do it. There's a fee you have to have for the college disc golf to be a member, but for the most part, yeah. If you guys are out there and you want to get something going, make it happen. Just do a little research on the college disc golf website. It's a little slow of a website, I will admit that, but there's a lot of information on there that'll help you get started for sure.
Well, these are college age kids that are savvy enough to jump around. And if I think back to 1997, and if me and Johnny V can get a disc golf club started at UWM when the internet was just getting started, I think the kids these days...
We had a live journal.
That's true. That's true. We had a lot of things going on those trips. That's another story. Yeah. Back when we were in college. All right. Go ahead.
No. Yeah, that's not... Yeah.
A couple of quick hitters. Ray, a regular out on the board, just said, I'll say, have you either watched and or if so, what are your thoughts about the DGN on Tour docuseries? You and Kona are featured a lot. You know, I know you were pulled in and had a lot of conversations as well. Have you had a chance to watch any of the docuseries? I think the fourth one dropped today.
No,
they didn't. Did they skip it?
They're skipping. They're waiting till December 5th. They're skipping the holiday season to give the editors just a little bit extra time and a break for the holidays.
Okay, so three of them are out because I've watched three. That means
I watched a couple of them. Usually, if I get a notification that something like that'll drop, I'll go and watch it. But otherwise, it's I don't, honestly. Okay. But they've been great. The couple that I did see have been great. Everything that they're doing over there has been pretty phenomenal, actually. It's really good content, and it's what's needed, right? This mm-hmm. off-season content. And to keep viewers engaged and to keep that the Disc Golf Network, you know, price tag.
Subscriber base, yep.
Worthy, yeah. and doing a great job over there.
Any big things, you know, or maybe a better question would be, how much do you influence any big major changes and or considerations for, you know, the Dynamic Disc Open? Anything that, any tease or is it kind of status quo for 2023's Dynamic Disc Open?
It'll be in June.
Okay.
It's not going to be April or May this year. There will be... I don't know if this is public news. Yeah, I think it is that the Glassblown Open's coming back. It's been announced, I believe. But that we are bringing the Glassblown Open back in that normal March, April, May, whenever time frame. We're going to bring it back, and then the Dynamic Discs Open is going to be in June. And right now, I believe it's going to be all rounds at the Country Club. I believe is how we've decided to do it. Supreme is great. I love how it played. I think majority of the players enjoyed it. The biggest problem is spectating out there, parking out there, and all that. And that's going to be bigger and bigger issues further down the line with these park style courses, honestly, and thick woods courses as well. I mean, we've already kind of seen some of that, right? Mm-hmm. So, well, I guess off track, but to answer your question, I'm not heavily involved with Dynamic Discs Open decisions or anything like that, but any decisions that are coming down the pipeline that they need some more topic on or whatever, I do sit on the board still at Dynamic Discs, so I'll be a part of those decisions and conversations. But for the most part, Jackie has done a phenomenal job getting the Dynamic Discs Open into this huge event and continuing it as a huge event, and the Glassblown Open as well. I'm very excited for that.
Yeah, okay, she really is phenomenal.
Yeah, she is. I agree. I have to quickly then get clarification. Somehow I missed the memo. Put me on your email list, people. What? I want all the internal updates and information sent to me, please. I'll reach out to Doug. So glass blown open, will that be the 2,000 person ordeal or whatever, the huge ordeal? And then dynamic disk open, are we looking just MPO and FPO? Is that the distinction that's being made? I don't know how I don't know this, but I guess that's what I'm...
Correct.
Is that... Oh. Yeah.
Yep, that's what we're going to be doing. And the glass blown open is going to be amateur only.
Okay, so no professional divisions of any kind.
Correct. Well, that's what I'm understanding. I believe that is what the decision was made. And we don't have the courses either to host thousands of people, like thousands of different divisions, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. So the last I heard, the decision was amateur A tier and Dynamic Discs Open, DGPT, Elite Series event.
Okay. Man,
really leaving out us pro masters, aren't you?
Yeah.
Gosh,
yeah.
Hey, where you at? Come on, bro.
The three of us are going to have to run our own flex start.
Let's do it. There will be plenty of flex starts to do it, for sure.
So. No, I did hear about the GBO a couple weeks ago, like a week or two ago. I'd seen that it was on the schedule. I'd seen a post about it. I don't think there was like a big formal announcement by DD, for instance.
Well,
but
there's an exclusive one right here, right now. I mean, Smashbox exclusive.
Sure, yes. Let's call
Even
it
if
that.
It's been out there.
But yeah, I did see that it was going to be an amateur-only event. But I'm excited.
There is another that we could talk about.
Let's hear it.
If you want.
Yeah.
The Meyer Lake Classic is coming back again next year, and it will be an A tier, so that's going to be big for us. We haven't had an A tier in Alaska since King of the Hill, probably what 4 years ago now, at least.
The year I was
has
there,
it been?
Did I help kill that.
4 years ago, it's been they've had it here, so it's pretty cool to have that one back. Steve O Story from Texas is obviously going to go up there with me again, and our assistant TD will probably be Derek Savory, and I'll be up there as well. It'll be July.
Okay.
I believe in July upcoming year, so.
Okay.
Awesome. Do you want to do anything?
Yeah. No, that's, you know, I was at one of the King of the Hills. I think the second to last King of the Hill was the one that I was at. You know, a great property and a lot of fun, and it just wasn't fully sustainable with their setup. And then I know you guys have gone on and totally different property and have made, you know, the phenomenal course that you have. And I know everyone that's been up there has raved about how much they enjoy playing there and the great course that it is. So, yeah.
Excited.
Okay. That's exciting. Yeah, it sounds like, is there anything else that you can fit into your pie or onto your schedule at this point? Because it doesn't sound like there's much more that you can take on, or is there?
Not fishing.
Okay.
Does that count?
Yeah. I mean,
I guess the weekends. No. As far as like work goes, no, my plate is beyond full. I've probably got 4 or 5 course designs in the queue, that I'm currently working on. I think I've done around 10 this year. So it's pretty average, I would say, on how many courses that I've designed per year. Now, if it was just course design I was focusing on, obviously you could do a lot more. But with the ESU taking up some of my time, and course design has been still there. It's still happening. I still absolutely love doing it. It's still a very big passion of mine. So,
very cool. And just thinking about the overall year that we saw, not just from, you know, Dynamic Disc, but, you know, obviously, you know, Trilogy, we see Westside continuing to grow, which I know is kind of a shared child with you guys in Latitude. Is there anything that, you know, we saw? Well, let's just go right there. The new line of plastic.
Supreme.
Where did that What was the impetus to that? What was the thought process? And or maybe just tell us if you had no part of that.
No, it's similar to the Royal Grand line. Like the Rive, the Grace, all of those discs are all made in this specialty plastic. It's next edge technology. It doesn't have the flashing on the bottom the way it's manufactured. Mm-hmm. Latitude went at it a different way. They they wanted to introduce new molds in this lineup. We wanted to revisit some of our older molds and put a new spin on it, right? New plastic, new durability. But in order to do that with this new manufacturing, you have to have a new mold made. So we had to get new molds made for each one of the discs we're going to come out with this. You're going to see the Escapes already dropped. You're going to see the Judge come out next month, actually. And then the Trespass will come out 2023 along with the Fugitive, a retooled version of the original Fugitive. And then you're going to see other of our discs drop, you know, throughout the years, some of our more staple discs. And then obviously you're probably going to see some Sake Bomb stuff as well. So obviously Sake Bomb is a big part of us now. And that's been such a great relationship. It's been awesome to have Rick around. He's just got so much energy, that guy. And he's just so much fun. He really is.
No wonder you retired as team manager. You're like, I got the big fish. I'm done. Like, you guys, whoever's next in line.
Yeah. You go to that easy tenured, you know, college job now, or you're just kicking back and
back
and driving 11 kids around in a van.
I'm really excited for the Supreme Trespass, because I love the one of my older Trespasses, and they fly phenomenal. And so I have a handful of the new Escapes in a box, literally, like, I think behind this curtain somewhere. Then I'm waiting till it's not a winter hellscape, basically. Oh, so once spring comes by.
You guys have snow up there already or not?
It's got like a little dusting.
Got a little dusting in the last week, and then we've had 40 degrees today, tomorrow, probably the next day. I'm running an event this weekend, and I think we're going to have somewhere in the 40s, so not too bad. But then it gets to that kind of like mushy, frozen, not frozen, you know, kind of, you know, not awesome stuff. So I wish it would either just get really cold and stay cold, or it would somehow stay 60 and kill us all on our warming up planet. One of the two.
One or the other.
Okay, maybe I don't wish that, but
all right. I've got a question. Are you up to date with Andor?
I am.
Okay, I'm not. I'm a few episodes behind. You're loving it? I've heard it's different.
I do enjoy it. I like it more the last few episodes than I did the first three or four episodes. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. I think I'm through five or six episodes, and the first three of them, it was a little bit. I mean, it was decent, but I'm like, okay, let's get going, and now it's starting to pick up. So I've heard it gets better and better.
It does. And I heard they just started filming the second season, so that's exciting. Yeah.
And speaking of,
I'm sure seasons,
my question that whatever language you were speaking, I don't care. But my question is for next season, and I know you're no longer in charge, but you still know what's going on. Just a yes or no will work. Should we expect a major shift or change of any of your competitors, either gaining or losing? Just, do you expect any major, like, really big, you know, Smashbox, crazy, unbelievable exclusive news? Should we expect anything like that here with players this contract season?
I think you're going to hear. Yeah. I'll say yes. I think you're going to hear it not just from the trilogy, but from a lot of manufacturers. I think there's going to be I don't think there's going to be as many shakeups as there was last year. The last year was pretty crazy for us, especially. You know, we signed a lot of great players last year. Mm-hmm. But I don't. Yeah, that's where I'm going to leave that. I'm just going to leave it with yes.
Yes.
Yes is a good for that. Yes.
All right. I like it. And I'm sure we'll hear. What typically is the contract season look like for Dynamic? Is that like till you know, December 31st kind of thing? Because I know that's always part of these conversations is when we can start either hearing someone is selling off their jerseys and they're selling off or letting go a few of their backup discs. And then that, you know, a week later, they're making an announcement. And sometimes that's December 5th and sometimes that's January 1st. What does a typical contract look like for Dynamic?
Typically, January 1st is when everything kind of starts to go in effect. They are, our team managers are right now doing talks, negotiations, all that stuff with contracts that are either up or extension or those kind of things. So that's, I always remember being the team manager, November was always an awful month because it was always those conversations that had to be had. And it was tough. It really was. So, it's not easy. It's not easy, right? So November was always a rough one. By mid-December, you typically in-house know what's the shakeup, what's happening, who's signing, who's not, those kind of things.
Well, and it is. There's this interesting yin yang to the idea of, you know, of just having Paul, the highest paid player, who's talked about what it means to have sponsorships, what it means to decline sponsorship and endorsement deals, and then someone who's on the other side of the books, being yourself, and or has been, and hey, like, we gotta, you know, hey, you're not maybe worth that much, and you know, you didn't maybe, you know, put up the numbers Paul McBeth did or whomever you want to use as a bar. Like, it's just kind of interesting, the two of you back to back even makes me think of how an unfiltered conversation, how enlightening that could be for the world.
Oh, for sure. You're absolutely right. I mean, you're not wrong.
Secret after show.
Yeah. Patreon exclusive one someday. And you know, Paul, you've been friends with Paul and competed against Paul for many years. And I know there's a lot of respect both ways. And I wasn't implying anything but that. But yeah, just two guys on two very different ends of the spectrum, especially as a guy like yourself who, you know, when you were on top of the world in terms of disc golf, it wasn't as lucrative as it is for Mr. McBeth right now.
That is a fact. That is 100. I think I won $5,500 for my world title from, that was the first place prize. I believe it was $5,500. So I think people are winning that for like 10th place now.
At Worlds.
It is truly incredible. I'll say that much. All right, Emac, is there anything else, totally open floor of any subject of any kind, disc golf or otherwise, anything else we need to hear from, get out of you here tonight?
I don't think so. Not at the moment. Not that I can think of. We've had a great season. It's been a great year. Excited for another one. It's weird because my season feels like it's just starting with the college stuff, but, and the course design stuff, obviously. I'll be traveling here in a little bit for some of that kind of thing. But no, everything's great. We're all happy and healthy, and we're ready for 2023, I think. I think we are.
You guys always get yourselves ready and then some. And then I know over at Dynamic, you guys put on an incredible show. Everything good with Denise? And I know she's been working, it seems like, day and night for a decade on everything she's been doing. Everything good with her?
Everything's great. She graduates mid-December with her master's degree.
Yeah.
Here in Emporia, at Emporia State University. So I kind of kicking myself. I should have put her on the team of the ladies team. I don't know if she could have technically competed next year in March or April for the national championship, though, since she would have graduated already. But no, she's great. She's loving the college life right now and getting her master's. And obviously it's been a hectic time for her getting her thesis accomplished. And she defended it about a month ago now, and everything went great. And yeah, we're just counting down the days now. It's pretty exciting.
Love it. All righty, Mac. You know, I know we say it a lot, and we truly mean it. People like yourself, you're welcome anytime. You've got the magic exclusive Smashbox phone. If you've ever got anything that the world should know about that we can help spread around the world, you reach out, and we'd love to hear from you anytime. But We wish you the best of luck in all the continued endeavors. I know your hat continues to change and evolve year after year, as does Dynamic Disc as a company. And Disc Golf's moving forward in the right direction. And a lot of the stuff that Dynamic Disc has been doing and pushing the envelope and continuing to push our sport forward is a result of the labors and the effort and the vision that the hardworking crew that you guys have, that you've been a part of that team for over a decade. It's been awesome to see, and we love it and support it. Want to see more of it. So thank you so much, pal.
Appreciate it, guys. Hope you guys have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Thanks. You too, man.
As well. Take care. See ya.
Have a nice night.
And everyone, that is Eric McCabe. And
one of the good ones.
Yeah. One of the best ones for sure. There's been a few events where it's great to, you know, I get to travel around and I'm so blessed to do what I do, but to then also check in with an EMAC and, you know, I think to an event this year, earlier this year, him and I, just the two of us went and had dinner somewhere and got to get caught up on everything that's going on in disc golf, and some of it's public, some of it's not. And that doesn't necessarily matter as much as just the fact that, you know, Eric is mm-hmm. within weeks almost, or within a few months of where Johnny V and I are age wise. We came into the game generally around the same time. He squeaked out a world a title. We didn't.
It was close. I mean, I thought.
But I mean, other than that, no. And then, like I said, you know, him hooking up with Rusko, him, you know, having that vision for the original Glassblown Open, and, you know, taking on those tournament director roles and then expanding it from there, and everything he's done with Dynamic. It's been pretty awesome. And
yeah, one of my favorite memories of EMAC and DD was, and again, this goes into Eric and my shared interests and nerd roots, was Avengers Endgame, the first one. Mm. Was,
do not spoil this for me.
Back in 2019, uh-oh, was released right at, oh, yeah, the GBO at the time. Mm-hmm. And all I kept thinking is, like, this is the biggest movie in the last 20 years. I don't want to be spoiled. And I have to do so. EMAC and I arranged to get tickets, and him and I and a few other guys, and I think Denise was there. We all went to go see a movie together in the middle of GBO one night. Just it was a blast. And those mm-hmm. are the type of things you get to do at GBO. So I'm really excited that GBO is coming back for the amateurs. And obviously it's going to be a slightly different
vibe and feel. And
yeah, I mean, you're going to get this. I think you're going to get the classic GBO vibe. And then you've got this new, much more formal DDO vibe. Mm-hmm. And I have to wonder, like, I would assume that I don't know when, if they're going to do two block parties or just one block party for DDO.
Those are some of the questions my mind was racing to, is just obviously mm-hmm. the Glassblown Open will, you know, be able to take on so many more players, but it will have the kind of this more, probably slightly more festive roots, and obviously an amateur and non-professional, you know, player base. Amateurs may be a better word. Amateur skilled level player base. You know what I mean. And it won't be quite the same. In a lot of ways, in that they're not going to go then, when they're done with their round or they're played their 23rd flex start of the week, they're not going to be able to go and watch the final round of you know, the MPO or FPO feature card mm-hmm. that weekend. They'll have to come back for the Dynamic Disc Open to do that. But so some of that will be a little bit different, and hopefully people turn out and have a really good time with it, because we've all learned how much fun Emporia can be and how they roll out the red carpet, you know, the marquees, the signs, the tourism, the hotels. Literally everyone in the city knows that disc golf is going on.
I mean, Emporia as a city has to love this. You're getting the amateurs, which hopefully, you know, you still get 1,000 people or 1,200 or whatever that number is going to be, 1,600, 2,000. Yeah. I don't know. And so you have, like, these people that are really excited to go have this awesome GBO experience, because it is the GBO is an experience. And then you have the DDO, which is the professional, where you bring in a lot of these amateurs to come watch the players. I will say, and I know I'm sure this maybe is I don't say hot take, but I'm disappointed that we're not going to see Joan Supreme for DDO. Because, and I understand the logistic issues with it, clearly. I liked the course, and I know a lot of people had issues with it and this and that, but I truly liked the Joan Supreme course. Now, I understand you can't fit a lot of people there due to the way the course is, the park style, weaving in and out of different areas. It's going to be a little unfortunate, but Emporia Country Club puts on a heck of a show.
Yeah. And we've seen what we do see is a different style there. And I know a lot of people will claim that there's not enough trees and that, you know, they don't like seeing people playing in these incredible winds. This year, it's going to be a little bit different. If we're going to be there in June, we're certainly going to see different temperatures. It's not going to be 38 and windy when you wake up in the morning. I promise you that in June. Now, will it be 108? That I don't know. It could be. But it won't be 38 and windy. So we're going to have different style. We'll see how the course looks, how the course plays during that time. I mean, just think about how it didn't even hardly feel like disc golf for one or more of those rounds last year when we were at the Dynamic Disc Open and the wind was ripping at 50 miles an hour.
But as I said, I loved it.
Sure.
Because it is a type of golf, and I'm always a fan of different types of golf. I want to see, again, I want to see that East Coast, tight wooded lines, hit, you know, your Charlotte style golf. I love that we start out, you know, as much as I don't really love the courses, I respect Las Vegas Challenge for what it is. It's a great opening event. Everybody gets to show up. Just, you don't really have to hit lines. You're probably not quite as sharp as you are at the middle of the season. You just get to go and unload. You get to throw far plastic. Everyone likes to see a disc throw and everything in between. So to get to an area where the style of golf changes, it is somewhat survival golf. You're throwing discs and you're hitting a spot in 30-mile-an-hour winds is a challenge. And so I love that personally. I loved that little slice of our tour. And if we don't, you know, it's always going to be windy at some event, but that is a next level wind event. And so for me, I will be a little bit disappointed to not have that. And I understand pros don't necessarily like it. It's a whole different game. It's, you know, putting is sometimes taking out of the equation, as we saw this year. Like, you just don't.
Exactly.
You don't even attempt 20 footers. You're putting them under the basket for fear they're going to hit and roll 50 feet. So it's just it's different. And I hope we get something like that somewhere in the tour and that we're not missing out on some of that. But, you know, I know a lot of people hate it. A lot of people look at that and go, that's not golf to me. I don't want to watch that. Well, I can understand that they're wrong.
Yeah, I mean,
their opinion is wrong, but whatever.
Yeah, well, it will have a different feel and challenge to it for sure this year, and looking forward to whatever that is going to bring. We know at the end of the day, no matter what, Emporia is centrally located to quite a few people throughout the country. And it provides a great venue for on-site spectatorship and viewing. And then also having things like the block party, having things like the ginormous fly mart, you know, and those types of scenarios, I think are no-brainers, that those are going to be all, you know, part of the overall equation. Looking forward to it also. Thank you to EMAC. Thank you to Doug Bjerkus and everyone else that is, you know, continuing to push forward. Obviously, Jeremy Rusko, but then the massive crew and staff that also work so hard over there in Emporia. All right. Do you want to cover any other super quick things before we get to an after show?
No.
I feel like we've covered a lot of the major bases here. There's lots of other stuff we could talk about in the after show. Got some fresh new Disc Golf Guy footage that released not only in the last couple of days, but also something as recently as today. We'll talk about that more in the after show.
Shout out to Drew Gibson for winning the Australian Open, which is
Australian Disc Golf Championships.
Australian Disc Golf Championships. It is an A tier over in Australia. Drew Gibson, Chris Hill, Luke Bain, and Scott Stokely, and Patrick Robinson.
Patty,
along with David Perry, take the top five. And for your Open women, Jennifer Allen kind of ran away with it. She won by about 17 strokes. No surprise. Not a lot of none of our touring FPL players went over there. I think they were her and Drew and her daughter were over there for a lot of fun and the Australian Open. So congratulations to those two.
Yeah, great to see Sarah Lee, though, who I had the chance of meeting in Sweden when I was there for the Skellefteå Open. And then also Cassie Sweeten, who is usually a hands-on favorite to win in Australia. And she met some competition and ran into it full bore there with Sarah and Jennifer Allen. So great to see them all. So many names and faces that I recognize and honored to be familiar with. And I know that Gatekeeper was doing footage, and from a post I understood of Jennifer Allen's, it sounded like Gatekeeper had filmed both MPO and FPO every day. And that sounds
miserable.
Miserable. that just sounds like very long days. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping.
Where's
and
the footage, bro?
No, I was just
come
say,
on, man.
I am hoping and trusting that then every night they didn't touch the footage. And then they actually got to enjoy Australia and they got to enjoy everyone's company. A few pictures led me to think that. I hope that's what they did and they'll get the footage out when they get the footage out, because you're not turning around two rounds of MPO or a round of MPO and FPO.
Are they even trying then? Are they even
trying? Don't try. That's my answer.
I know.
If you can't do it, then don't even try and kill yourself. So I know they're on their way back or have touched back down here in the States, and we'll keep up to speed with them. And speaking of big winners, I know I mentioned Jonathan and his little pickleball thing. I think I saw Felix over at Ace Run Productions also pick up a victory in the sport that matters. That's disc golf. So Felix, if that's what I saw, I'm going to give you credit for it. I think I saw that, that you won in something this weekend. You won a tournament. Congratulations. And if you didn't,
we don't do retractions. Whatever you did.
We're gonna just say you won. I know you
just
did.
Just tell everybody you won and then point to our podcast. Like,
yeah,
they told it.
Jack Wagon said it. Apparently I won a tournament. Awesome. Congratulations to you, Felix. And thank you to the guys over at Ace Run Pro for all the help. Also, I believe we saw Deanne Carey took down the event that Paul Macbeth took down also in Florida this weekend. So congrats to her on her solid performance. There's something about the late season, like A tiers, where Deanne's like, yeah, I got that. Like, I feel like Myrtle Beach a year or two ago or this year, there's just been a number of events where
she's just getting warmed up, baby.
I know. And I just think like bring more of that to the rest of the year. And I know it's a challenge and it's a grind, but man, she's some of these events. I think she averaged like 980 or 1,000 rated golf this weekend again.
Okay.
Crazy. Smashbox Corrections Department got fired by Steve Dodge.
We never rehired him back. It was very strange.
That's a good point. The Australia New World Champion. The new Australia World Champion. You guys are funny. All right, guys. We're going to call it for the regular show. We've got plenty of other extra things to talk about in the after show. Stick around for that. We've got a giveaway, of course. I didn't even hit up Macbeth or McCabe. We had the mix on tonight. They should be giving us stuff. They get all that stuff. But we got some goodies to give away, I think. Uh-oh. I may even have a disc from this weekend, this upcoming weekend, the Cold Turkey that I am hosting. Whoops, let's do that. The Cold Turkey, not a newer innovative stamp. It has become the theme, though.
But I love like that it. Stamp.
A little mini stamp. We got some Cold Turkey discs that can be given away. So we'll probably have one this week and one next week as well. So looking forward to it. Big shout out to my boy, Spicy Boy, who also celebrated a birthday a couple days ago and went and saw Elton John and hung out at the OTB. I mean, talking about living your best life.
He went to go see Elton John?
Yeah.
I watched the first half of the Elton John concert on Disney Plus.
He was at the concert.
And let me tell you. And I like Elton John. Yeah, like I'm not a huge Elton John fan, but you know, you expect all the classic songs. And I mean, you can tell he's showing his age. I mean, I imagine being there would have been pretty exciting, but the Disney Plus version didn't necessarily interest me nearly the live Disney Plus that it was on. So, but
either way, happy birthday, Spicy Boy. Thanks
happy
for
birthday, buddy.
All of your help. We're going to call it, folks. This has been Smashbox TV's podcast 430.
Ooh.
That train just keeps on rolling. We're going to have an after show. We got a giveaway and other random useless stuff that you probably want to talk about. So get your chat board all fired up, because we'll be fired up in the after show. For Johnny V, I'm Terry Miller, the disc golf guy. Thank you to Eric McCabe. Thank you to Paul Macbeth. And we'll see you in a few minutes in the after show. We'll see you then when you step inside the Smashbox.
Thank you to our $2 and above patrons. Your name is listed below in the credits. If you are interested in being listed as a producer in the Smashbox TV credits and supporting this and other fine podcasts, please visit patreon.com/smashboxtv.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.